Oh, thank you so much, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's me, Bill. Wendy, who's usually here.
And it's me, Wendy.
You're a little deeper. Just a little deeper.
It's me, Wendy.
That's better. Can you go just a little deeper? Go.
It's me, Wendy.
That's better. Not quite lurch-like. Not like that.
Kind of peppier.
A little peppier. A
it's
lot
me, pep- Wendy.
That's better. That was scraggly, though. Wendy, and I don't know if you know
Bill,
this.
Don't make me laugh.
It's a true. No, I'm not going. That's not my goal today, Jude. It's not my goal. Wendy takes this day off every year because Easter candy is half price. So she goes and she saves probably thousands of dollars
oh,
on
yeah,
Easter candy because you can get a great deal on Cadbury
you know,
eggs.
I wish I had thought of that before I got one of my coworkers an Easter basket.
Because?
Darn.
Oh, to buy it today, you mean?
Yeah. So yeah, I left it on her desk. She comes in at 11. I can't wait for her reaction. She's probably listening to us right now, Kim Gordon.
Yeah.
So she's Jewish and she on Friday was like kind of like a dog.
Because
like a
puppy.
Why? She's like, you know, I've always kind of wanted an Easter basket.
Oh, she never had an Easter basket?
No, because she's Jewish.
Oh.
They don't celebrate Easter.
No,
I know. Shocking. I just found that out.
And the Passover basket isn't as festive.
No, apparently not. There's nothing in it because don't you have to fast? So I bought her an Easter basket and I filled it all up with stuff and then I put a little note on it.
What did the note
to
say?
To Kim from the Easter Bunny in parentheses. The Jewish one.
Oh, that's nice. Mm-hmm. That's very, very nice.
There's gotta be a Jewish Easter bunny.
Yeah, there is. There
I was
going to
put Jesus loves you, but I didn't know how she'd take it.
That's too much. That would be
too much. But he does love her. He loves everyone.
Everybody. Yep. Yeah. All right. So Wendy's off. Judy Pilak, as you've heard and probably surmised at this point, is filling in for Wendy.
Oh, no. I just stopped by to take that story.
Right, just to tell the story, and now she's on her way. Well, thanks, Jude, for stopping by.
Sure.
That was fun. A little bit of a follow-up to something that happened last week, and I know you wanted to jump in. You did jump in on it, but now there's more news to this. I told the story on either Wednesday or Thursday. The days all run together. You know that. One of the days last week, as I came into the building, and I'll just tell you the fast version of this. I parked down behind the building. There's two elevators that service that particular area that bring you. They whisk you magically from the parking area up into the building. There's only two elevators. If you miss an elevator, you got to wait 3 or 4 minutes. So there was a lady who got on, there was a guy who got on, and then I got on. And as we're about to leave, the doors close, but I see a guy opening the door to come to the elevator. So I hold my arm out, I save him, he gets to come on. 3 seconds later, as we're about to ascend, the same thing happens. It's a woman who's running frantically. I hold the door open, to which the lady who was already on the elevator said, and I quote, "Some of us have a meeting like that." So she was mad at me, and I put this under the bracket of no good deed goes unpunished. A lot of people responded and said, I did the right thing.
I called in.
I know you
did. I was
did.
In my
Thank
car
you.
Just, oh, my gosh, I couldn't believe it. Because Wendy
you.
Was kind of like, well, you know.
She said, too bad for those
right.
people. They should
and
plan ahead.
You see
Steve?
Him running?
This morning, Bill.
Yeah?
At that same elevator.
Yeah?
I had the awkward eye stare with the guy in the elevator as he let the door
oh,
close.
Oh, no.
We're just looking at each other. I'm like 20 feet away.
That's...
All you got to do is put your hand in between.
No, I was too far. But it was kind of a crowded elevator, too, so I understand it.
Well, you have a couple of options. You can, number one, you can stop the elevator with your arm. You can hit the hold button.
I can never hit that button. I can't find it.
No?
I can barely find the button for my flail. I'm always looking. That's what happens when I do screw up and I don't hold it up for people. I'm like, I'm sorry, I don't know where the button is.
But the route that most people take is they make the motion as if to stop the elevator, but they don't because then on paper it looks like you've done your job.
Right.
When in reality, all you've done is pretend that you're going to stop the elevator.
That's what Wendy said she does. Yeah,
I know. I was embarrassed.
I mean, I think the line should be if you see the person running or some people just walk in, they see the elevator, they don't care. They can
right.
wait. But if the
right.
person's running or you make eye contact and you know they want to get on, then I yes. think that's acceptable.
Yes.
So after I called in, I pulled into work.
Yeah.
I'm at that same elevator and I walk
on
in.
On the same day.
Same day. Yeah. I pulled in a few minutes later and I walk into that vestibule area.
Very. That's the most church-like word that you've used so far today.
It's Easter Monday. I'm
vestibule.
Still very, yeah, vestibule. And there's a guy standing there waiting, and he's in workout clothes, which just bugs me right off the bat.
Yeah.
He's got shorts on and gym shoes, and he's on his phone, just looking down. I don't even think he glanced up when I came in. So he's on his phone. I'm behind him now, standing behind him. The elevator door opens. He's on his phone. So he waits a good 2 seconds before he actually goes into the open elevator.
Yeah.
You know, I'm behind him. I'm like, are you kidding me? Pick your head up and watch where you're going. You
right.
know, and then when he goes in, he kind of looks over and gives me a smile. And he looks over. I go to myself, huh, is that Larry Wirt?
Oh, Was it?
Who's the...
One of our bosses.
Where he's the president of Tribune Company, right?
He's asked me to refer to him as a major domo, and I don't know what that means, but he is... I think he's one of our major domos.
He's a major domo. He's a big wig, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But I can't be sure because he's in these workout clothes, and you know when people are wear something so different...
They look
different,
a little different,
yeah,
right.
I can't really
he's
tell.
Usually dressed
and
to the nines.
And his head's down the whole time because he's looking at his phone because, you know, he's so important. So then it takes an extra second for him to push the button because he's still on his phone.
Yeah.
And then I push my button.
Yeah.
And he goes to
He was pushing your buttons,
too.
Oh, he's
pushing.
I can
but
tell.
But the whole time I'm thinking, it could be him and I should be nice. And I just called in and said, kindness matters.
Right.
And why is it bugging me? Just because he's taking an extra second. But I'm like, are you kidding me? So then we go to one and the door's open. And again, he's looking down so he doesn't get off immediately.
Oh, no.
Like people, you know, the door's open, you immediately get off.
You're supposed to.
He again hesitates and then gives me the look and then gets off.
And do we know yet if it was one of our bosses or not?
Okay, so he had like his arm was in not a sling, but it was kind of a hard thing. It wasn't a cast, but it was something that you would wear maybe if you sprained your arm.
Yeah, sure.
So no, I still wasn't sure, but he really bugged me. And so then I asked Jimmy DeCastro, and then he confirmed it. Yes, it was him. Because he saw him later. He said he was in a really bad mood. I was thinking, well, it's because he couldn't get off the elevator quick enough.
I would, before passing judgment on this person, I would determine or need to determine if it was, in fact, one of our bosses. And if it was, I'd give him the benefit of the doubt and go, you take all the time you need, sir.
Right. Well, so after finding out that it was indeed him, okay, maybe he needed to be on the phone the entire time and not look up and just give me a little, hey, how you doing? Thanks for everything you do here.
Right.
We really cherish and appreciate you. No.
But that time, if it's anyone but our bosses, even though it's just a second here and a couple of seconds there, you would think you need to take into account the fact there's other people whose days depend on yours, so get to business, you
exactly.
would think. Except it's our boss, so I should
except
take all
the
time
Except it's
our
boss, and so I was like, hey, no problem.
Right.
But if it were anyone else, I was like, oh, really, dude? Look up, you're, hello, doors are open.
Right.
Yeah, so I was thinking in my head the whole time as I was smiling at him.
Right.
Do you sign my paycheck? You
time
too.
To right. Then you're doing everything fine.
Right. And he needed to be on his phone, obviously. It's very important.
Of course it is. Let's take a quick call. Hold on a second. Harold wants to chime in. Harold, hi. You're on WGN. Go ahead.
Hey guys, how you doing?
Really good. What's up?
Not much. Place I used to work. I used to work as a security guard.
Yeah.
And in the elevator, and there was a girl. She did this maybe two or three times. She got in the elevator. She was me, but. You know, 20, 22 years old.
Mm-hmm.
She'd get in the elevator after me, and I'd reach over to hit the floor that I wanted, and she would slap my hand and push it away and go, I'm in a hurry.
Oh, wow.
She wouldn't let me get off on the floor I wanted. I had to go for a ride to where she had to go. Then she would get off, and then it's like, you're free to go where you want to go now.
What?
I would have pushed every one of those buttons.
I didn't say that, but
every one
of them.
That
was her.
You can't do that. You
First
can't,
of all, you can't slap someone.
No. No.
She would, like, refuse to let me go, you know, to go where I had to go. It's like, I've got to go. I've got things to do.
She sounds like the same woman who was on Bill's elevator the other
day. That's the same lady. I think it's the same lady. Did she do this more than once, Harold? This was a one-time-only event, right?
Two or three times.
Really?
Yeah.
Would you just
laugh? For about 6 months or whatever. And about 6 months from you, did a couple, two or three times.
What is wrong with
people? Yeah, that's not acceptable at all. That's terrible. Harold, thank you. Awful story. Have a great day. All right, take care. You're not allowed to just slap other people's hands.
Oh, my gosh. Can you imagine?
You, sir, are in my way.
Yeah.
You can't do that. That doesn't play. All right.
No.
You don't
need
do
to
that.
Get somewhere.
That doesn't work. All right, we're going to take a quick break. We have a big show. Wendy's off today buying half-price Easter candy. Judy Pilak is here. If you want to jump in at any point during the show, 312-981-7200. It's us, WGN. It's Bill F. and it's Judy Pilak. She's filling in for Wendy Snyder today. Judy, we got some news, some Blago news, some Rod Blagojevich news earlier today.
Don't you miss saying Blago?
I do. That's the first time I have said Blago in over a month.
How long did it take all of us to finally get it down pat? Governor Blagojevich.
Right. I still can't spell it. If that comes up in a spelling
bee. Blagojevich.
Is that how you spell
it? In my head, I would always write it, yeah.
If I'm ever in a political spelling bee and Blagojevich is my word, I could be in some trouble. I know how closely you were involved in this case. You covered this
both
case.
Trials.
Yeah.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Let's talk about what happened today for just a little bit. What went down earlier exactly?
Well, I believe the appeals court, the Supreme Court, is it?
Yeah. It is.
said they would not take up the appeal.
Right.
Which I find...
Not a huge shock.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Not a huge shock. But I really thought somewhere along the way they would... Because last time an appeals court... I wish Steve would help me out with this. I think they took off a couple of the charges. On technicalities, though.
Right. I remember that.
Yeah. So it didn't affect his sentence, though.
Right.
So, what I am surprised about is that he was actually even convicted.
Really, are you surprised he was convicted? Why?
I got to tell you, the first one, it was a hung jury. I didn't think they'd prove their case.
Yeah.
I mean, covering these corruption trials, very tenuous to me.
Yeah.
Circumstantial kind of. I mean, you know, and the argument is, well, he didn't do anything. He actually didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
He talked about it.
Mm-hmm.
He threatened it. But what did he do that was beyond typical politics as usual?
So what do you think the decision process was? I know other people have said similar to what you just said, but what do you think they saw that made them realize he should be incarcerated?
I think it was, there's no way you couldn't have heard or, you know, been, if you were, maybe, I'm not saying the jurors did that, but it was just the biggest story of our time here in the city for so long.
Yeah.
And when they lost that first case, I just feel like the federal, the prosecutors, they were rabid to get
to
this
find
guy
something.
Behind bars. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was the epitome of what you shouldn't be, of the worst kind of, you know, unethical. And I mean, you know, it sounded bad. That's the whole thing. To me, though, so circumstantial.
Yeah.
You hear those tapes, it sounded bad, but really, what did he do? What did he actually do? Now, the FBI did lay out the argument that was pretty persuasive, obviously for the jurors who did convict him, that so if you're going to plan to, if you plan to rob a bank, okay, so the bandits all get together, they all have their masks on, and they've got their guns and their bags in their getaway car, and then we catch them right before they rob the bank. Well, they didn't rob the bank, but they were going to rob the bank.
Right.
So that was their argument.
Similar in this
case. He didn't sell the seat, but he was certainly on his way to selling, you know. Talking about it.
So at what point does it become illegal? Does it become illegal to scheme to sell the seat?
Yes.
Or does it become illegal once you're actually
obviously,
in the process of doing?
It became illegal when he talked about doing it.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Would you equate, what you just said reminds me, I know this is strange, but I'm wrapped up in the O.J. Simpson television movie. You know how once O.J., once he didn't go to prison for killing his wife and Ronald Goldman, it seemed like they said, at some point,
we're gonna get him.
We will find a way to put this
right.
man behind bars at some point. It's almost similar
it
to some extent.
It is almost similar, yeah. Yes. It's almost like it was such a slap in the face when they didn't get him the first time that
right.
they were hell-bent on getting him the second time. And I'm not saying he wasn't guilty of some of those charges. It's just overall 14 years.
Yeah. That seems excessive.
It's very excessive.
Yeah.
Now, and it's funny, in the newsroom, I would get kidded all the time about, you know, especially by Bertrand. He would accuse me of just liking, you know, oh, you love Blagojevich. I'm like, it's not about that. It's just about having
the
covered the trial and, yeah, the fairness of it all. And, okay, just because, you know what? People hated him.
Yeah.
They hated him. He was just a goofball.
You know,
you wouldn't believe how he acted in every day when we'd show up and we'd sit down. All
why?
The
what were you saying?
In.
What was he
he'd
doing?
He'd come over, shake our hand, talk to us about his kids and... I just,
so what do you attribute that to? Was it a cockiness? Was it a way of saying I don't think I'm going to be doing jail time? Why?
It was cockiness to the point of absurdness of that he just didn't get it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, now I mean I guess there are the people who would say, well, because you know if you're not guilty you can walk around, but that wasn't really it with them. I think he was just so over the top.
Yeah.
Like
he did
what? What did I do? Yeah. You know what? The guy could not stop talking. He couldn't stop. Talking.
Do you remember that period?
That was why he was convicted.
There's probably a lot to that.
Yep.
Do you remember that period where he kept saying over and over and over, Rob Blagojevich kept saying over and over and over, listen to the tapes, that will exonerate me. Once you hear those tapes, you'll realize I'm not guilty. But in reality, the more you heard those tapes, it was the exact opposite. The more you heard the tapes, you go, oh boy, this
but,
is bad.
And see, again, to me, the more you heard the tapes,
yeah.
was just, oh God, just stop talking. It just, you know, yeah, but I just keep... I mean, again, I didn't think they were as bad and certainly not to the degree of being convicted in my head,
sure.
but they sounded bad. They made
right.
him look so bad. It
right.
was just, it's the culmination of all that, I think, played into it.
His brother never did jail time on this,
nope.
did he? He
mm-mm.
didn't.
He stood
and his
firm.
Wife
No, she was never charged.
Right.
And his brother was charged. I think it's just like one or two counts. It was, and it was more with the campaigning part of it.
Yeah.
I can't remember. Isn't that terrible? And, but yeah, he was from day one stuck to his guns and said, absolutely not, absolutely not.
Paula has an interesting question. Paula, we only have a second or two, but I think this should cover it. Go ahead. Ask your question.
Just quickly, do you think that Obama, when he does his pardons, will do something for Blago? And do you think that he also still holds some secrets we don't know?
Oh. Interesting question.
That is
both.
A really interesting question.
Yeah.
I really can't answer that.
That's interesting. Would Obama, you know, they always do that thing as they're exiting office where they throw out all these pardons.
I mean, he's already served several years,
right?
So that could be a good possibility.
Something to watch for, certainly. And Paula's other question was, are there more secrets about him that we have not been privy to yet?
For Obama?
Rob Blagojevich. Who
it
knows?
Pretty much was all put out there. I mean, what's worse than what you heard on those tapes?
Does Rod still have some secrets that he hasn't told on somebody? Oh.
Interesting. Who knows?
Maybe. I think the guy, like I said, he can't stop talking. I think he would have fessed those up by now to someone.
Yep. Thank you. Paula, great questions. Thank you so much. Take care.
That's interesting.
All right.
Can you imagine the jail guards? You're like, oh, God, shut up.
Right.
I mean, I guess he's doing really well. He's, you know, of course, probably teaching the...
I hear him singing Jailhouse Rock a lot. I know he loves Elvis Presley. I just hear him singing that all the time.
I wonder what his hair looks like.
Who knows?
It's got to be white.
It's all white now.
Yeah.
It is.
All right,
a quick break, and then more show coming your way next. It's Bill F. and Judy in for Wendy today on WGN. Steve, thank you very much. It's Bill F. in for myself, and then Wendy Snyder has the day off. Judy Pilak is sitting in. If you want to jump in and contribute to the show at any point, 312-981-7200 is your best bet. You can call us there. You can text us there. Steve, I'm just a little confused, and Judy is as well, about one of the stories you just did.
Yeah.
Explain to me now this kid with the van who accidentally ran over his grandmother. I'm confused. He was just shifting gears for her? I don't get this.
I don't know exactly why she would have been behind it and why she needed him to put it in gear. I don't know that. But apparently he, you know, it's one of those things where he put his foot on the gas.
Instead of the brake.
Instead of the brake, yeah.
And then
backed
up over his grandmother.
Apparently,
that's
not
good. That's going to ruin a holiday more times than not.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Wow. So, all right. Well, if more details break, just jump in,
sure.
Steve. Absolutely. This is peculiar, but if you're a parent, you will understand this. Chaos broke out yesterday at an Easter egg hunt sponsored by the good people over at Pez. Now, usually Chaos and Pez don't show up in the same story. If you have
Pez, ever been in need of a Pez? If you don't have any, things can happen.
That's true.
I love Pez too.
Back me up on this. As good as Pez taste, they taste better when you get them direct from the dispenser, don't they? If you lift up the head of Bugs Bunny or Superman.
Right. You have some Pez dispensers.
I have a couple of Pez dispensers, some vintage ones. I've got the Green Hornet. That's my prized Pez possession.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm very proud of that one.
Do you put the Pez in there and eat them?
Yeah, I think they just taste better.
So you use the prized possession, you use it?
I don't use the Green Hornet. Mm-hmm. I will use a more modern. The cutoff is when they added feet to the Pez. In the heyday of Pez, you just had a dispenser with just a giant head.
Right. They have feet now?
Yeah, now they've had feet for like 15 years.
By feet, do you mean human feet? Or
they're not human feet. That would be...
Cartoon feet?
That would be really weird if you bought a Pez dispenser.
You mean like a stand?
Went, there's human feet on the bottom of this. Wile E. Coyote didn't have human
that
feet.
That would be one you'd want to keep in your case.
That would be a special edition human feet Pez. No, there's like a base at the bottom of
to
the
hold it up.
Pez shaft to keep it balanced, right? And that was that. That's when they became more common. If you have the earlier ones, I guess
Handheld ones.
Yeah, the handhelds.
The normal ones.
Right. All right. So listen to this story. And again, if you're a parent, you'll get this. Various places do Easter egg hunts, and sometimes the parents become a little overzealous. Right? Pez has apologized for a chaotic scene at its annual egg hunt. The Pez Candy Company has apologized for an Easter egg hunt that descended into chaos at its factory over the weekend when overzealous parents ignored the start time and rushed the field. This is a statement from Pez. We would like to sincerely apologize to each of our guests. This was not something created to frustrate or make people angry. We only want to do good for the local community. That's what Pez, that's Pez's mission statement, you know. According to the company, the Easter egg hunt drew hundreds of people to the fields outside of its Orange, Connecticut facility. Organizers said they placed more than 9,000 eggs on three separate fields for the children and intended on having staggered start times for different age groups. That's the best way to do it,
right,
with an Easter egg hunt.
Because you can't have the, you know, three-year-old in there with the 12-year-old.
What chance would the three-year-old have?
Or, I'm sorry, I mean, you can't have the three-year-old in there with the 40-year-old.
Insane parents?
Yeah.
Yep.
Who's rushing the field.
So true.
Why are parents even on? What?
Well, you could see where parents would want to escort. If you have a 2-year-old or a 3-year-old, you
right,
would want to be on them for this Easter egg hunt.
But then those parents did what?
Well, then it got ugly. Unfortunately, people chose to enter the field prior to anyone from the Pez staff starting the activity, according to the statement from Pez. The crowd moved on to the second field and waited for only a couple minutes and then proceeded to rush the field without being directed to do so and before their posted start time. The crowd then immediately moved to the third field and took over that field, removing everything well before the activity was even scheduled
to
start.
Now this next line is my favorite.
They rushed the field and they took everything, Pez General Manager Sean Peterson told WFSB-TV. Kind of like locusts.
That's exactly what I was picturing when you were describing it. They just swarmed the fields and took everything.
So the Pez people, let's picture that for just a second, the Pez people envision this being a safe, friendly event where they say, okay, gentlemen, in 5 minutes, you'll all be allowed to take the field and find the Pez eggs. But the parents said, well, no.
Yeah, I don't think I can wait 5 minutes.
We're not waiting 5 minutes.
No, absolutely not.
We know there's eggs in them, their fields, and we're going to take those eggs. Peterson and other Pez staffers tried to talk to as many people as we possibly could, he said, letting them know that if everyone didn't get an egg or candy, we had plenty of candy at the front entry for them. We sincerely tried our best to create a fun-free activity for everyone to enjoy. But few did, it seemed. Now, here's what this reminds me of, and I don't even have to explain this because it's as evident as evident could be. The Pez factory is very similar to Willy Wonka's candy factory. And if you saw Willy Wonka or read the book by Roald Dahl, you know that greed destroyed 4 out of the 5 children.
Absolutely.
Didn't it? And their either fathers or mothers or aunts or uncles or grandparents who didn't understand that greed could destroy. In this same story, it's almost identical. Greed ruined it for everybody.
How many Easter eggs do you need?
They had 9,000 of them.
What was in the Easter eggs? Pez candies?
Pez candies.
Okay.
Yeah.
How many Pez candies do you need?
Well, my answer is going to be different from most people.
I'm sure you've been to, okay, yeah, besides Bill.
Right. Most people don't need that many.
Green Hornet.
But I want a lot of Pez, yeah. But I'm not gonna take out a 4-year-old, which is, the Pez people are being polite here, but actually what you had is you had parents trampling other people's kids to get to these eggs.
Right, for their kids.
And have you ever been, because when our daughters were little, we went to a couple of these, and I saw this firsthand.
I know.
This happened all the time.
But, and I have to say, I mean, I will admit it to Bill, it's this like a little competitive edge
you do get competitive.
Because you want your kids to get enough Easter eggs. You feel right. Like, because as you look over the field where there are 9,000 Easter eggs, you think to yourself, well, Mike is not going to get one. Mike is not going to be fast enough. He's not going to care. I'm going to go. It's ridiculous. They
but
should
Pez
not
is there,
have, we should have no more Easter egg hunts.
But Pez is there to say, hey, look over there. See that giant candy factory? It's loaded with candy. If your kid doesn't have any, we have more. We've been making this stuff all year.
Matter. It's about getting the damn egg.
I am a competitive person by nature, but never at the risk of taking out somebody else's kid. When my daughters were little for Halloween, neither of my daughters are thrilled with sweets. They're okay with sweets,
wow,
but they're not like I am.
I'm
know.
So jealous.
Isn't that rare?
Yeah, it is.
I used to take them out trick-or-treating. My wife and I would take them out trick-or-treating. And after like an hour or 90 minutes, they had had enough. And I'd say to them, guys, we waited all year for this. Think about it. We need to do this more. You can't just give up after 80 or 90 minutes.
There was not a lot of candy in there that you liked, huh? You needed to go further.
I wanted to find more.
Oh, yeah. I want those, you know, full-size bars. Yeah.
Right.
I'd
not
be
just
like,
the fun size.
Get back out there and don't come back till you get those full-size bars.
Right. No pressure.
Yeah.
But until you have
don't
more.
Come home. Yeah.
Right.
I know it's dark, so be careful.
Now get back out there.
Exactly.
This is ridiculous. No, I'd go with them. I remember one year it was so cold. It must have been 20, 25 degrees. And my daughter's like, we're freezing. And I went, do Disney princesses give up this easily?
Do monsters and what?
Do Belle and Mulan give up that quickly because it's a little bit cold out? I don't think they do.
Oh, that's funny. My kids are always monsters, so I was like, toughen up.
Right, you're monsters.
You're a vampire, for come gosh on sakes. Yeah.
You know what they have to endure? Vampires?
Werewolves, don't cry. Get back out there.
All right, a quick break. More show. It's Bill and Judy Pilak filling in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. The texts are coming in, Judy. Judy Pilak, by the way, filling in for Wendy today. 847 says, and I quote here, no good deed. Now, this is something I say all the time. And I wasn't going to say it this time, but it fits. Well, here's what they say. No good deed goes undone, which is a more polite way of saying goes unpunished. But, yeah, the people who make fine Pez candies weren't trying to put it together an event where small children got trampled by adults.
Right.
That was not their goal at all.
And by the way, I think a man got arrested, but he tried to run from police, which is just cracks me up
too. At the same event?
Was he running on the fields where the eggs were and with a basket in his hand?
You know what I noticed? Connecticut's problems are very different from our problems here in Chicago. If we have a day where kids are trampled getting Pez eggs, that's a good day here in Chicago. But by Connecticut standards, that's a very, very bad day. Here's what 815 says. They created a city ordinance that forbids throwing candy at parades in my city. Parents were allowing their kids to run out in front of cars and floats to pick up candy. Now, they do this in a lot of different places.
Right.
And I remember as a kid, where I grew up in Oak Forest, we had a 4th of July parade every year. Actually, they do where I live now in Evanston, too. And that was the highlight of the parade, was having city officials whip slowpokes at kids in the audience.
Ooh,
watching
slow pokes.
It. Yeah, we had slowpokes.
I'd go into the street for that.
Well, kids used to, I mean,
well,
it was a miracle that nobody was trampled
right
or killed.
Well, but if you throw them into the crowd, they shouldn't be falling on the, I think what happened is they saw the big bag of candy someone was carrying and maybe wanted to rush them.
Right,
and
right.
That's how they all fell out.
That's it. That's
damn
it.
Damn parents.
708, oh, I'm very proud of you, 708. They say, as Gordon Gekko says, he's from the movie Wall Street. That's Michael Douglas from Wall Street. Greed is good. Personally, the eggtastrophe. That sounds like something Egghead would have said on Batman.
Oh, that is excellent.
Right. The event was going excellently until the eggtastrophe. The eggtastrophe was disgusting. That from a listener named Sue. Have a nice day. If you're a kid, that ruins Easter for you, doesn't it? If you're a little kid and you're looking forward to this event, and then you head out there, and it doesn't just ruin this Easter. Like, you have those memories for the rest of your life. Why don't you like Easter? Well, because
right
when I was a kid, we went to the Pez factory, and I saw kids get trampled by
trampled
adults.
And I didn't get any and no eggs, because all the adults got the eggs. It's just ridiculous. Maybe they need age restrictions.
That's the right idea, right?
No one over 15.
Right. No one allowed
okay
on the field.
Even. Yeah.
Although, what?
I mean, you could have a little, if you're going to have a 3-year-old,
yeah,
really, do you want them running? I mean, you're going to have them out there in the open, have a little field, and the
right
parents have to stay around a perimeter.
Right.
They can still watch their kids.
It seems to make sense.
I mean, why would they?
Doesn't it?
Yeah, I don't feel like maybe I did go out in the field, too. I'm trying to think if I did.
But only when you were invited onto
exactly
the field. You
just
didn't, these people were cheating.
Accompany my child who was picking up the eggs with his little hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not me scooping up 4 at a time.
You could help. You could say, hey, I think there might be an egg over there.
Right,
you know, you see
right
one.
Hey, look over by the tree.
Right.
Exactly.
That's a good place. But that's it. You
right
don't want to go beyond that. Let's talk to Sue. She has some thoughts on this. Sue, thanks for calling in. What have you got for us?
Hi. Love your show.
Thank
I
you
always do.
Thank you.
You're
that's
welcome
so nice.
Thank you.
Is that because I'm here, Sue, that you love
yes
it so much?
Yes. Oh, my God.
That has
I
a lot
miss
to do with
Wendy,
it
but I heard your voice. I'm like, yay, because
yep
I'm driving home.
Yep.
Okay, overzealous sports parents. Just a tiny way to kind of turn left here,
mm-hmm,
you know, comparing this whole thing. When I read this thing in the paper yesterday, I thought, are you kidding me? This is all on the parents. And my husband coached, you know, we have 3 boys for years, all through elementary school and, you know, great middle school. And it was like these parents who would stand up screaming, you know, that their third grader belonged in the major leagues.
Isn't that terrible?
I mean, honestly, you know, we didn't give trophies out to our kids if they lost. And we used to just say, you know, just practice. And we'll get it, you know, again next time. But I, honestly, I used to sit there absolutely horrified, like, sit down and snap out of it.
Exactly.
Come on.
I remember my son played in a baseball game one time, and they were just killing him, the other team.
Yeah.
And they continued to kill him.
Sure.
To the point where, I think at the time my husband went up to them, to one of the guys, like, dude, come
this
on, you're winning. And they were like, six? No, he was like, you know what? When you want to stand out there with your kid for 4 hours a day, you know, he's six.
Yeah. That's crazy.
Oh, my God. And honestly, you know, Pez, more power to them. And they did such a wonderful thing. And that's when you just want to trip these parents.
I know.
Yep. But anyway, love you. Thank you for
Sue,
a wonderful
thanks
show.
So much. Take care. Okay. Have a great day.
Bye. They're going to have to ban. Bye. They're going to have to ban parents from now on.
No more parents.
No more parents.
Kids only. Here's a text from 847.
They should have like Easter Bunny standing there guarding. Big ones.
Donald Trump is going to build an Easter Bunny wall around the Pez factory. I used to arrange, this is from 847, I used to arrange these type of events at McDonald's. We would have the eggs hidden in the play place and would do it by age groups. That's what they tried to do here in Connecticut. The children were never the problem. The parents, on the other hand, were the worst. While one age group was hunting, we also had activities for the other ages, and a bunny had to keep them occupied. It's always going to be the parents.
Right.
The kids understand that there's rules you got to abide by. It's the parents.
And those bunnies that do the perimeter in Connecticut, they should be armed.
Right.
And I don't mean with eggs.
Right. Something much more serious. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Steve has the news, and then more show for you. It's Bill Left, Judy Pilak sitting in for Wendy on WGN. Steve, thanks so much. It's Bill F. and it's Judy Pilak. Judy is filling in for Wendy today. Wendy will be back tomorrow. Before the show started, we were going over how our Easters went. And this was I don't know if you've had this happen in the past, but your kids were all off either at school or doing something. So it was you and your dad kind of were hanging out together on Easter. And how does that play out? Is that good?
Well, we were supposed to go out to eat for the first time ever. I've never gone out to eat on Easter because we always have a big family thing.
Sure.
And but I smartly texted my friend, my neighbor-ish friend, and said, "Hey, what are you guys doing? You want to, you know, I was going to invite them out to eat." And she said, "Oh, I'm making lasagna and some other fabulous food. You want to come over?" And I was like, "Yes,
thank you." Who's
going
to say no to that? Sure.
And she knows my dad, so it was perfect.
Oh. And you get along with your dad fine?
Yeah.
Oh.
As long as you don't talk about politics.
Is that a sore spot?
Oh, my gosh. It has become horrible.
I've always thought that it's in probably everybody's best interest, especially at a holiday dinner, to just put a moratorium on talking about politics and maybe religion, too. But I've seen too many things go wrong
right.
when there's a political
debate. It seems
debate.
To me it's worse. We, you know, growing up, we all talked about politics all the time.
Yeah.
And everyone could say their piece and it was fine.
Right.
Now, oh no, it's so nasty.
What changed?
We're like at such opposite ends now.
Yeah.
It's weird. Yeah. I mean, so this is the man who brought me up, Democratic.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I always vote. I vote Republican sometimes.
I vote for the person you think is best.
Yes, absolutely.
Right.
But he has become a staunch Republican. I mean, completely like, you
know.
So
did much of the conversation turn to that? Or did you say to him it's best to not?
He did one thing. He said one thing. What was it? Something maybe he, you know, he refers to Obama as my president. Drives me up a wall.
Right.
And that's the
Does
thing.
Does he say Barack Hussein Obama some? Does he slip
says,
that in sometimes?
I don't think he's ever said his name.
He just says your president.
Which right there, so disrespectful. I didn't, you know, it's like when Bush was president, I didn't say that to him. Well, you're president. I said President Bush like you're supposed to.
Yes.
Anyway, I forgot what he probably just made some. I think he said something about the Democrats in general. Oh, the Democrats are giving everyone everything. That was it. And it just, that's all it takes. I gave him the look of death.
And then did you quickly talk about other things?
Oh, yeah, I quickly
drank. Oh, it's almost cherry season.
I quickly downed my wine, glug, glug, glug,
right.
Slammed it down and walked away.
Right.
That's how I handle that.
Not so much with my parents, but with my in-laws. There were several different holiday meals that all of a sudden the talk turned to politics. And then I'd look over at the table and I'd go, oh, there's the carving knife. This isn't going to end well. Somebody's going to get stabbed. I know how this plays out. And I always thought it would really be best if we all agreed, hey, for the next couple of hours, especially this year, because it's everybody is in such opposite corners this year. So maybe this would be a time to make an agreement with the family. no discussion of politics during the meal.
You have to do it. I mean, I've never, ever wanted to say that, but now I do. I mean, I totally avoid it.
Yeah.
And I just, like I said, the minute something is said, I walk away because I get vicious too.
Right.
Because, you know, I can't take it.
Yeah.
I feel like people are, you know, I am the most informed person and everyone must listen to me.
I remember this vividly when I was a kid. My parents would have a bunch of people over. And they would discuss politics, and sometimes people would be on the left, and sometimes they'd be on the right, and sometimes they'd be in the middle. But it seemed like, and this was, sometimes it would happen during dinner, or sometimes after dinner, they'd sit around the living room and they would discuss what was going on in the country politically or the world politically. And it was always very civil, I remember.
Right.
But now,
it's
like
not,
I said,
civility
the stakes
gone.
Are higher.
Yes.
So the turning point was what? Because I can't, like, normally when something gets that drastic, you can go, and then that happened, and then everything changed. But I can't figure out what happened that made everybody so on edge when it comes to politics.
In my personal world, Fox News happened.
Is that what it is?
Yeah, I think
so. Is it Fox News?
And I think as people get old, you know, as anyone gets older, you get a little bit more conservative.
Yeah.
I just generally, you know, not me because I'm the hippie, but
right.
I think, but even, you know what I mean? Just it makes sense. Okay. So now pair that up with, I just feel like the Republican conservative movement just, you know, the Tea Party, it was all at the same time. It was
right.
All timing. Everything happened. And I don't know, this locusts of people, they were like locusts.
Like the Pez Factory.
More like, yeah, exactly. Like the Pez Factory. I'm sure Fox probably owns it. That's probably what happened. I don't know. But personally, and I think in my family that happened, people started watching Fox News more. And it became a bigger, you know.
Could you also, I hate to point fingers, but because we're on radio, so this gets tricky. But there are people on air, and there's entire stations devoted to just angry
right.
political
that
talk.
That happened too.
So when somebody's listening to that for hours and hours and hours, and they're constantly getting riled up by people putting the blame on one side or the other, then there's a bug in your head,
exactly.
isn't there?
Exactly. And I guess, you know, Republicans could say the same for the other side, you know, except I can't, you know, they always point to people like, you know, Jon Stewart. I'm like, well, he's a comedian.
Right.
There is no, I don't know anyone who's that
right.
riled up on that's a Democrat that does it. I mean, it's the guy on HBO. What's
there's
his
a
name?
Couple. There's Keith Olbermann. There, you know, to some extent, Bill Maher. I'm a
Bill
huge
Maher,
fan of
right.
Bill
Maher. Bill Maher, I could see. But even, I don't know, he's more, again, He's pretty funny and he's quieter
right.
and not.
But you could see with him, you could see where if you're extreme to the right, where Bill Maher is going to rub you the wrong way. I'm not.
Yeah.
And his show is a little bit preachy for me even.
Yes.
You know,
I get that.
But certainly not to the extreme. And we've got a bunch of texters saying, actually, Rush Limbaugh happened. Why aren't you saying his name? I would have a hard time. There's people who listen to him for several hours a day. And by the end of it, you're just shaking because he's, you know, he's throwing so much blame one way.
Right.
I think a lot of that contributes. I really do.
Absolutely.
I really
do. Absolutely. It has to be. I mean,
right.
because to me, it's like we've created this generation of zombies who just don't want. Because here's the thing. If you want to tell me something, you know, I'll listen.
Yeah.
But I don't get that from people who I think are such staunch right wingers now, and they just don't, you know, nothing. I mean, nothing you say, even if it makes perfect sense, and in fact, it is fact.
Yeah,
they don't want to hear it.
There's an article it's called "The Brainwashing of My Dad," and it's by a man named Michael Rechtschaffen.
Isn't that by Judy Pilak?
And I've crossed his name out, Michael Rechtschaffen. I've written your name in, and it talks about exactly what we're talking about, how talk radio and Fox News are really
right. Well, he's actually quoting. It's this filmmaker Jen Senko who made a documentary on this. It's called.
Oh,
I
that's
believe. Yeah.
The brainwashing.
He's just writing
my dad?
This article.
Oh,
yeah,
I see.
She
okay.
she did this, and I mean, she really blames Fox News, and you know, I think it's a lot of things.
Well, here's what's scary about Fox News: their slogan, their motto is fair and balanced, and really, if they're fair and balanced. Nothing makes sense.
We're in trouble.
Nothing makes sense. So I think if you're, and I hate to say gullible, but if you're watching that under the guise of what you're watching being fair and balanced, you need to reevaluate everything. You need to take a good long look, because that's the most unfair and unbalanced news that there is. Whenever people say the fake news and they refer to shows like Saturday Night Live, or they refer to The Daily Show. To me, fake news is Fox News, because very little of it, really, if you do some fact-checking on Fox News, very little of it is fair or balanced.
Right. I mean, they've been caught doing, you know, at one time, I think they ran this, because this really, and I bring this up to my dad all the time, and he's just, whatever, he does that. He's okay with that. It was an abortion rally.
Yeah.
Anti-abortion rally in Washington.
Yeah.
They were running, you know, live, look at this huge rally. It was like, and everyone had coats on, and it was like the dead of summer.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they got called out on it. They're like, oh, yeah, sorry.
So it was file footage.
It was file footage. Yeah. Now, you don't just make that mistake. It wasn't. They were like, oh, yeah, you said it was live. You were going live to Washington. You can't make that mistake. That is premeditated. And someone, you know, because obviously what was going on at that time in Washington was there weren't enough people. It wasn't, you know, good enough, sexy enough, big enough, whatever.
Right.
So, yeah, that's just outrageous.
Somebody, where did the text go? So, one of the texts wanted to know about our station. What about your station, WGN? Very little of it at all. I'm sorry, very little of your broadcasters. Well, it's not worded properly. What they're saying in this text, it's a little bit broken up, is they're saying that here at this station, most of us tend to be more to the liberal side, but that's not necessarily true. I can tell you a couple of hosts here at the station that are not leaning to the liberal side.
Yeah, they have to listen all day long. I think they'll get both sides.
This text says, 815, you've obviously never heard of Rachel Maddow. Yeah, heard of her and listen. Yeah. There are people who are skewing to the left, and there are people skewing to the right. It just seems, and maybe it's not fair of me to say, but to me it seems like the ones who are skewing to the right are a little more adamant and angry about it all.
And
for the most
more
part,
determined to, you're right, because we're going to be, I'm with you on that. I go more to the left. Hopefully I'm always in the middle. I mean, certainly I'm always in the middle news-wise, but personally. But yeah, it's just so much more vicious on the right side, and there's no compromise, and no, and they don't want to listen. Where I feel like leaning more to the left, I at least have an open mind.
Right.
I mean, I always listen. I always have a conversation.
Right.
There are no more conversations.
No, those days are over.
Yeah,
those days are over.
That's the problem.
There's a guy on LS, Mark Levin is his name, and he's on at night. And I used to listen for guilty reasons. I used to listen because I was sure that at some point a blood vessel would pop in his head because he was so angry about everything and blamed everything on President Obama, no matter what would happen. Well, that's
Obama's
what you get
fault.
With Obama. Yeah. So I would listen because I would, you know, I would have like an office pool of at what time his head was going to explode. But I mean, that's as angry can be. Every day he's yelling and screaming.
But see, and that it just rings so false to me. It's that I think is that's the way they want to play it. That's the way the networks are like, all right, come on, let's really put it on.
Yeah. Yeah. There's no doubt about that.
And I mean, and the beautiful women. Oh, my God. Who doesn't want to watch, right? I don't want to watch Fox News.
So Fox News figured out a formula of angry guys and beautiful women. And that's, forget fair and balanced. It should be called angry guys and beautiful women.
And there is one time of the day, someone in the newsroom pointed this out, I won't name names, where Fox has a group of gals on. There's like five of them, and they have a guest on.
Yeah.
And the camera is actually lower, and it's angled up. So, and they all have their legs crossed. They all have beautiful looking legs, but it's all legs.
You don't get that with Wolf Blitzer.
You don't get to see
Wolf Blitzer's legs.
Nope.
All right, you want to jump in on this? Please do. 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Judy Pilak sitting in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. All right, a lot of calls on this. It's Bill Leff. Judy Pilak is sitting in for Wendy Snyder. We're trying to figure out what exactly happened. There was a time where you could discuss politics with family and friends. Those days seem to be gone because somebody's going to get a bazooka in the forehead. It's not pretty. Let's talk to Mickey. Hey, Mickey, thanks for calling in. What's up?
Hey, hi there. I have to label myself first that I'm a very moderate Democrat.
Yeah.
So I kind of agree with, you know, both sides on different positions, but when I go up north for fishing trips in northern Wisconsin, or if I'm in the south driving and happen to turn on AM radio, there's three or four very, very extremely right-wing stations. One of them is 20, like Rush Limbaugh 24/7.
Yeah.
And there's other religious zealots that go way over the top as far as conspiracy theories. And there's nothing on the other side at all, radio-wise. Now, maybe on FM there is, but but there's so much more saturation of that level of thinking. And you go into gas stations and you see young people listening to this. It's just like it's going through their mind, almost like rhetoric that they start to develop themselves. I also will say that I listened to both Bill Riley and Rachel Maddow.
Yeah.
They're both very, very intelligent.
Yeah.
When I listen to Fox News, I have never heard anything Rachel do that was with that vitriol, except maybe her condemnation of the water issue in Flint, Michigan.
Right, right.
But I would also challenge you as a people just to listen to these talking heads and then fact check them. And when I fact check Rachel Maddow, she's pretty much spot on. I mean, she's not veering too far off the level of truth. I cannot, unfortunately, say the same thing about Fox News.
It's really strange. There is, on both sides, there are plenty of radio shows and even stations dedicated to believing in the left side or the right side. For some reason, the ones that do on the right do better ratings-wise. They just do. I don't know why. I'm confused by why, but they play better on the air. I don't get it, but it's
which
a fact.
Which is why there's a lot more. That's what happened. It, you know, exploded because it was a great ratings game.
Yeah.
I don't know so much now, I guess, still. Is
it's
that what
even,
you're saying?
It's evened out a little bit more. Yeah. It's not the ratings bonanza it once was. But Mickey, you're right. But I mean, if you search around the dial, there have been experiments with whole stations, angry left-wing political talkers, and they fizzle out quickly.
Yeah.
That's
it. No, they don't work. You're right. And the last one really that was popular was Keith Olbermann, and they dumped him.
Yeah.
So, and he was fairly popular, probably a bit more popular as a sportscaster, though.
He announced the other day he's ready for he wants to make a comeback. If you like to talk politics, this year has taught you this is a good time to be in the game.
Yeah.
So he's trying desperately to get back in it, Mickey. He is. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mickey.
Thank you.
Take care.
A great point Mickey had about the fact-checking. But you know what? A lot of people who are in that extreme, they don't care. They don't want to check facts.
Right.
They believe what they believe.
Right.
And it's,
well, the guy's running
the facts
for
just
office.
Get in the way. They get in the way. We don't need those facts.
If the candidates themselves aren't interested in being honest, why would the people commenting on them be interested in being honest?
It doesn't make sense. There's never been an election year like this one, but there are no issues. There are no, news people, it's every day we're like, well, just one issue, one thing.
Right.
Say one thing. No. Nope.
The story of the last couple of days over whether or not Ted Cruz had affairs, five affairs, and whose wife is prettier.
By the way, the source being the National Enquirer.
Right.
I mean, I understand that people are, you know, bringing up the, you know, the shoes from O.J. Simpson, but it's the National Enquirer.
Except Donald Trump, and he's a master at this. There's nobody better at this than Donald Trump. As he was pointing out that he wasn't responsible for that story, he said, although the Enquirer has a pretty good track record.
As he was pointing out, he was digging the knife in even deeper. Can you believe him? Yeah, well, I hope it's not true for your own
but
sake.
They do have a good track record.
That's right, because everything they say is true.
Let's get John on. Hey, John, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, you know, to the last couple of years, I haven't been really interested in politics. I'm not right and I'm not left. I like Huffington. I like Bill Maher.
Yeah.
And Bill Riley. But the concept for me is trust. And I don't trust either side. And the reason I say that is because, as I heard, a new congressman goes in and he's got to spend 60% of his time trying to come up with financing for his next election. He doesn't have time to do his job.
It's true.
And as far as Hillary, she's a liar. I think Trump is way off on the other end. But where does it leave the average American that listens to try to get a balanced thing of someone that isn't lying or telling a story?
It's nearly impossible. And they all talk about campaign reform, but you'll never see it.
Right.
They talk about it all day long.
And the candidate field this year, too, is just, well, something to be desired.
We'll never get term limits, and that's one of the most important things I think they should be talking about.
Right. Absolutely. Agreed. Thank you for the phone call, John. Have a good day.
You guys do a good job.
Oh, thank you.
Thanks, John.
Very kind. All right, let's do this. We appreciate all the calls. I wish we had more time for the rest of the calls and the texts. We have to take a break. News is coming up. Kim Gordon has the news, and then more show coming your way next. It's Bill Left, Judy Pyle sitting in for Wendy on WGN. Tim, thanks very, very much. It's Bill Leff and it's Judy Pilak sitting in for Wendy. Wendy will be back tomorrow. Also joining us in studio from your Chicago Tribune, Mary Schmink. Hey, Mary, how are you?
I'm doing my Eric Zorn impersonation today.
Yes, you are. Very convincing.
So, Bill, when I was driving in here, and I tuned into the tail end of your segment about news, Fox News,
yeah,
all that. But before that, I was listening to my favorite new podcast, which is News in Slow French.
What is that? I'm not familiar with this. What is that?
I just discovered this. It's fantastic for anybody who wants to brush up on a language.
Yeah.
There is this News in Slow French, or the News in Slow Spanish, or the News in Italian, Slow Italian, and they'd really do the news. So I was listening to a French version of the news of the attacks in Belgium.
Yeah.
Barack Obama in Cuba. And it's actually real news.
It is.
It's
and did you? You're using the word slow, right? They do
right.
a slower.
Slow, that's what it's called. Bienvenue à News in Slow French. So you
and
know.
And the reason is so if you're not adept with the language, this you're able to keep pace.
So if you speak okay, you know they have even slower. They have it for beginners, so it's super super slow.
Yeah.
So there was a time when I spoke decent French.
Oh.
But, you know, kind of losing it. So it's really
that's
nice.
Amazing.
What
I didn't know such
idea.
A thing existed.
Huh. It is really good. So for all your listeners who want to brush up on their French, Spanish, or Italian, podcast is free, and you can sign up for a little bit of money for a more elaborate.
Right. Is there a slow English version for those of us who speak English, but we just don't like the news
Why
thrown
don't we
just at
make us? This,
but is that like, are they just reading news from here in French, or is it like,
no,
are they actually?
It's like a separate newscast that it's designed for what they're doing.
Because yeah. I'm just wondering what that newscast is like compared to what you'd hear in English.
It feels
in sloppy
like,
English over here in Chicago.
It feels like real news, and then they'll break sometimes to have a short conversation about yeah. it, and then the conversation. Even though it is slow,
yeah.
he is very intelligent.
I understood that perfectly.
That was, yeah,
I've never
we're
taken
in.
French.
We could do that.
Wow.
You know, every
my
once...
French accent is
yeah,
more
very
better
good.
Than my French.
Every once in a while, I'll watch on our satellite provider, there's a BBC channel, and I'll watch the news on BBC because even when it's bad news, somehow being delivered with a British accent makes it seem
makes,
a little more upright.
Well, it
I don't
makes
know why.
You feel more intelligent.
Yes, it does. Just a British accent. Now, speaking of accents, I always forget, because to me, you're part of the landscape of Chicago. I always forget that by birth, you're not a Chicagoan, but you're from Georgia originally.
I
and
am
sometimes,
a southerner by birth.
Sometimes, not often, but a little bit of that southern accent shows through. When do you get the southern accent? What happens? Is it when you're in a hurry or upset? When do you speak more
well,
southerny?
Well, when I've had a little bit too much to drink or when I'm with my southern cousins.
Does that happen
oh,
when you're
yeah.
with, yeah?
yeah? Yeah, when I'm in the South in general, I just, you know, I have this philosophy about accents, that the accent that you learn as a child is your true accent.
Sure.
And that you can cover it up if you move to other places and you learn to speak like the people you're around.
Mm-hmm.
But you never really lose an accent. You simply repress it.
Oh, that makes sense.
So,
sure.
you know, if you go back to your native territory
yeah,
you fall
with
right
your
back
native
into it.
People, it's like, I always feel so relaxed when I'm speaking with my true accent.
You know what? You can do slow southern news.
Now, I think
we
that's
could all
redundant.
Learn it.
I'm almost sure that's redundant. So do you notice it yourself? If you go back to Georgia and you're with cousins or family from there, do you realize, well, this isn't the way I usually talk. I'm talking.
Yeah, I will. Yeah? I will hear it in myself.
You do.
But I don't feel I'm faking it. And yet I'll hear it and I'll think, wow, where did that part of me come from? where is it lurking most of the time?
Are you as fascinated as I am when somebody, I'll use Madonna as a good example. Madonna is from Michigan. But sometimes Madonna has a British accent. Johnny Depp also finds himself sometimes with a British accent, even though he's not from England. What's that thought process like where you go, I'm just going to speak with a British accent now?
Well, I think people, well, actors for one thing, have to learn so many accents. I mean, yeah. how do they even know what their natural accent is
right.
at a certain point? And Madonna, in her way, is an actress, right? She's a performer.
Sure, yeah.
I think people who work with their voice a lot...
But don't you write that up as being sort of affected? I went to Columbia College, and I've told this story before, but there was a teacher there who had a very thick British accent, but he was from here. He lived here. He was born here, and he still lived here, but he had a British accent.
It does feel affected, but you know, I have a close relative, I will not name this person, but who for a while was speaking with a British accent, and I could never figure out what that was about. But I don't think she was intentionally trying
no?
to speak with a British
accent.
Well,
because I've got to think about it if I want to speak right. with a British. I couldn't even do it right now. I was just going to try to do it.
Maybe some people who read too much, or not too much, no such thing. But, you know, I think she was reading a lot of British fiction during
Oh,
that
maybe
period.
That's some part of it. But then if you're a family member, if you're the parents or a brother or sister, don't you go, hey, you don't have a British accent. What are you
yes.
doing? I would call them out on it. I would
feel
like, a
knock
need.
It off.
Right.
Yeah. What are you doing?
Right.
But, you know, I also, one of my brothers lives in Russia and has lived there for 20 years and speaks many, many languages. And he speaks with a very curious accent now.
Does he?
It's and sometimes I want to tell him to stop it.
What's the curious accent?
But he's
accent?
Got all those languages
but he does,
in
exactly.
his head.
He
so
has
I,
all
I
those
get
languages.
That.
He hasn't lived in the United States in the past 30 years.
Oh, that's a while.
So when he comes over here, his English sounds just odd.
Really?
And yeah. I try to get him to, like, get out of that. It's almost as if he's not a native speaker and he learned English
yeah.
in a British school.
Wow.
Interesting.
Wow. I wouldn't know what to make of that. I mean, 30 years is a long time, so you got to give him the benefit of the doubt, but that doesn't make sense.
And yet his English is perfect.
It is.
It's far
it is.
More correct than
How about
anything,
that?
Anything I
see. Mary Shmeek is here of the Chicago Tribune. We're going to talk about a column or two that you've written recently. Some very, very good work. It's Bill Leff and it's Judy Pilak in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. All right. It's Bill Leff and Judy Pilak. Judy's sitting in for Wendy Snyder. Wendy will return tomorrow. Our guest is Mary Shmeek, fine Tribune columnist. If you wouldn't mind, Mary, a couple of columns you've written of late have really interested me. One of them in particular has to do with a college-age child. Well, do we even say child? A college-age adolescent.
Their children to their
40. Let's make that the cutoff. 40's the cutoff.
Always so, children to their parents.
Right, always, forever and ever and ever. But what happens when your kid doesn't get into the college of their dreams? Let's talk about that a little bit.
Well, I wrote a column for the Tribune Sunday paper about a woman who had written me back in 2003 when she was a high school senior at Zion Benton Township High School. And she wrote me to say that she hadn't gotten into Dartmouth.
Mm-hmm.
And she was just bereft. And she just said, do you have any advice for me? And so I wrote a column at the time just talking to her about rejection from college, rejection in general.
Mm-hmm.
And then many, many, many years later, I hear again from her, wonderful woman named Ashley Bunnell. She was 18 when she first wrote me. She's 31 now.
Mm-hmm.
And she just wanted to tell me what had happened to her since the time that as this despondent 18-year-old who didn't get into Dartmouth,
yeah.
what had happened to her since that time.
What happened?
First
what can
of
you
all,
tell us?
She went to Knox College
yeah.
in Galesburg.
Yeah.
She was first.
Wonderful writer's college.
First term. So unhappy to be there. She was eager to transfer out. But then she came back, and in the second term, something changed. And she just started to love it. And she had this fantastic experience. She just learned everything. She wrote me a wonderful note about how, in addition to all the great classes she took, you know, she said, at first I didn't drink enough, and then I drank too much. I learned to dance in front of other people.
Yeah.
I stayed up all night discussing philosophy and politics.
Yeah.
She just went on and on about the wonderful experience she
yeah,
had.
Yeah, sure, of course.
And then she went to grad school, and she was working on her thesis when, at the age of, I think, 26, she got a diagnosis of stage 3 cancer. And so, you know, her life went on from there.
Yeah.
Chemo, radiation,
yeah.
thinking she was clear of the cancer, learning that she wasn't, having a kidney taken out. And in the midst of it, she met a guy online, and while she was in chemo on Fridays, they would correspond via text or Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, in 2013, after they took her kidney out, they told her she was clear. I mean, you know, cured is not a word we
right.
use with cancer, but clear. She moved to Pittsburgh, married this guy. She's been there for 2.5 years, married, works with the homeless, and she was just so eloquent mm-hmm. about, you know, being 31 now as opposed to 18 and mm-hmm. everything that she had learned.
Right.
And that rejection was put into perspective for her.
Of course. Don't you think what this illustrates beautifully is, even though you have an ideal of what your life could possibly be, there's no way to know. Just because you stray from the normal road, sometimes it's going to be better, sometimes it's going to be worse, it's going to be different. But just because you have in your mind the college you're going to go to, or the city you're going to live in, or the man or the woman you're going to marry, or whatever, it doesn't always play out that way. That's not always a bad thing.
Well, and that, you know, and that's what I told her in the original column I wrote. You know, that rejection is really an alternate route sign.
Sure.
Right?
Yeah.
It says, you're going down this path instead. Yeah. You may not want this detour, but you were going to take this detour. And the detour exposes you to wonderful things that it never occurred to you.
Of course.
Existed.
Yeah.
And the whole myth of the perfect college. Right? This idea that there is only one college for you.
Right.
And without it, you will be miserable and doomed. It's just getting young people to believe that.
But yeah. How many times do they go to their dream college and they're still depressed and,
A couple of the most miserable people I know went to Harvard.
Yeah. You build it up so much and it's such a learning curve. You just can't, you can say it over and over. You can try to teach your kid and they just, at 18, they don't get it.
Right.
They don't get it. They have to
live
it.
But, you know, some of that, I think, is that the nature of rejection itself.
It is,
isn't
it? It's
not just that you didn't get to go to the college you wanted to. It's that somebody said no to you and didn't want you.
Right.
And that is devastating.
But that happens from the time you're a very small child up until your last moments on the planet.
Right.
That's always going to be a factor.
Happened to me probably 3 times today.
Absolutely. Right?
Although I will say, when my son got that rejection letter, it was a rejection for me too.
Right.
It was so funny because I knew how much he wanted it and I really wanted it for him. And yeah, it just, but then you know what? Everything worked out for the best. Like you said, it reminds me of my favorite saying, two roads diverged into a wood.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Did I do you want to finish it?
Yeah, you should do the whole thing.
Why don't you do it? Do you know it? And I took the one less traveled by, and that has made all of the difference. I love that saying.
In the second half, Judy's going to do all of Tennyson's work. If you're a fan of Tennyson, Judy's got some surprises for you.
You know, I was a college admissions officer before I was a journalist.
You were.
Wow. So much more respect for you right now.
And, you know, and so I'm very aware of just, it's not a fickle process at all.
No, I imagine not.
But there is an element of, well, now, I mean, so much depends on grades and SAT scores, and it did
right.
back then, too.
But and essays now.
Right, and essays. But there's just, first of all, it's like any competition. You don't know who you're up against. Sometimes you're just up against people who, on paper, are better than you are.
Right.
Let's just face it. On paper.
Except
right? Numbers bigger. It's just the way it is.
Right.
Except we're taught early on, we're taught to believe that we're not better than anybody, that we're all the same. But in reality, we are better than some people and not as good as other people.
Well, and there are also aspects of all of us that are impossible to measure.
Without a doubt.
That, you know, that don't have a number that you can apply. So,
right.
You know, a lot of colleges, and certainly the one where I worked, there was a discussion. There were applicants. You would sit around and talk about the people.
Yeah.
That's encouraging.
Yeah, it is encouraging. But at the same time, the applicants are held hostage to the preferences of the people who are making.
Oh yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Did you
decisions.
Have your coffee that morning?
Right.
Are you mad about something someone said?
Right.
Yeah.
Does that person remind you of somebody who did something bad to you?
Right. Yeah.
Right. Thank you for being here today. It's always so much
fun
to see you and to talk to you. Mary Schmick can be read in the Chicago Tribune, and I highly advise that you do so. You'll be thrilled that you did. Thanks, Mary, for being here.
Thank you.
We'll find out what Steve Bertrand has coming up next on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Stick around. It's Bill F. and Judy Pilek in for Wendy on WGN. Kim, thank you. It's me, Bill F. Wendy Snyder is usually here. She's off today. Sitting in for Wendy, the one and only Jim Toronto, Elton Jim. Welcome back.
You are playing Mama Can't Buy Me Love.
Correct.
Thank you.
We do that for you.
One of my favorites.
It's all request radio as long as you're the co-host, and then you get to call in your requests.
Well, I want to thank you, first of all, for the invite. This is amazing.
Well, you already know I'm a huge fan of your work, and I will go on record as saying...
You mean my paintings?
Yes, your paintings are phenomenal. You can hardly see the numbers under the colors.
My murals?
Yes. They're breathtaking,
I'm
Jim.
Doing pastels now. I'm through with your acrylics and the oils, and now I'm doing pastels.
You graduated.
They're much difficult.
I'm going to say this, and please know that this is a compliment, because it is. It won't sound like a compliment.
Okay, when you have to preface it, it isn't.
All right.
But I'm used to that.
I consider you to be the most underappreciated talent in Chicago radio over the past decade. I really do.
Wow.
The contributions you've made.
My accountant says the same thing. Although he said underpaid.
Oh, underpaid. Yeah. I'm going to go with underappreciated.
Well, I appreciate that. You know, I'm going to be like so many of those people that have that cult following.
Yes.
You know, he was so great. Nobody knew him.
Isn't it better to have a cult following than be mainstream and have everyone love you?
Well,
I think so.
Well, you know what? Actually, I am someone that shies away from popular stuff.
Yeah.
When it gets too popular, I shy away.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm okay to be with Salieri and all those other guys.
Right.
It's God's fault.
For those of you who have not heard Jim Toronto before, Jim was a mainstay on Wally Phillips' show for many, many years.
For sure.
His sidekick, his trusted sidekick and companion.
Well, I have to say, this is like homecoming for me.
How come? Why?
Because when I started here in 2009 with Gary Meyer, we did not do the afternoon show initially. For a year, we were on from 1
Middays.
To 4. From 1 to 4. So here I am in this state, in this studio.
Mm-hmm.
With Steve Bertrand, who's going to be doing news. He was a part of our show at 1 o'clock.
Although he disavows it. He says never a part of it.
Most do.
Yep.
Even Kevin, your producer, was our intern for a while.
Right.
And I'm working with a guy from Oak Forest again.
How about that?
From the South Side.
It all balances out.
The only difference is that he didn't wear hats. He's got the good hair.
That's the only difference. That's it. That's the only difference. Well, we're thrilled to have you. I've been looking forward to working with you for a long, long time. So now it's
finally
happened.
Our paths have always crossed, but we never worked together.
No.
So this is fun, and I appreciate the invite.
Wendy and I had you on as a guest once.
Yeah, to promote one of my fill-in shows.
Right. And you have another one coming up this Saturday,
I just found out Saturday morning that, once again, my vampire shift. I'll be on from 2 a.m. to 5. When everybody's up, they want to make sure that the most people can possibly hear.
Hottest, they call those the hot hours.
Yeah, that's the underappreciated one. Those are the underappreciated listeners.
Right
at 2 to 5.
Although, can I say this? I did that shift for 2 years here, and the people who listen at night are the most loyal people.
In fact, I love that shift because it is people that are up for a reason.
Yeah,
they're either insomniacs or coming back. So I don't mind it. It's just that obviously, you know, there's not a huge. But we talked about that. It's quality over quantity.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's so true.
No, hey, I just love being on the radio. So.
Now, here's what I want to ask you. I know what a big fan you are of a particular film that airs on television this time of year, and I'm hoping you kept your streak alive and got to see The Ten Commandments.
Last week, I went in my program guide to say, okay, usually on the Saturday before, ABC, from 6 p.m. to 10:45, Ten Commandments. Now,
six to 10.
It's 45, almost five. I mean, it's with commercials.
Right, but it's a nearly 5-hour broadcast.
And we talked about this before the show started. I have to give ABC Television, the network, credit for still running a movie that is now 60 years old, 1956.
Yeah.
And, you know, mostly old movies don't even show on network television anymore. Mm-hmm. And they have continued this tradition, and it is such a throwback movie, and I believe it is, and I'm not trying to get anybody riled here, take the religious aspects, if you can, from a movie called The Ten Commandments.
I didn't even think of it being religious until you just mentioned
it,
actually.
Well, you shouldn't, because if you take the religious aspects out, it's the greatest comedy is not Animal House. It is not Ghostbusters.
Airplane.
It is not Airplane. It is not Stripes. It is not Some Like It Hot.
Right.
It is not It's a Mad, 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 Mad World.
It is not Miss Congeniality 2.
No, definitely.
It's not.
It is The Ten Commandments.
It is. How come?
Well,
why do you say that?
I mean, if you watch this movie, the acting is so over the top.
Sure.
It is so, it's a campy classic. I mean, think about it. You've got these amazing sets.
Yeah.
You've got you've got a burning bush.
Yep.
You've got plagues.
Yep.
You've got sea parties.
Yes.
What kind of movie?
Right.
What doesn't it have?
Right.
I mean, it's got serpents turning from staffs into snakes.
Yeah.
Everything. The special effects are just corny enough because it's 1956.
Right.
They were cutting edge.
People were. They went in and they thought, "How did you do
How
that?
How did you? I mean, they at right. the at the Universal." Lot they used to show the parting of the sea.
I know,
because that was
I know
the most incredible thing.
Yeah.
And don't forget, then you've got the you know God is throwing fireballs,
right?
And you know he's writing,
right?
God is writing; it's his autograph. In fact, one thing that bugged me about it, this is the first time I've been watching this since a little kid.
Right,
I was born and raised, you know, Catholic. Went to Catholic grammar school, Catholic high school. I was an altar boy, the whole thing. I think they wanted to be a priest. They wanted me to be a priest.
Oh, they did, yeah.
And I've always said, if I had gone that route, I certainly would have been at least a bishop by now. I believe with this personality,
it's
they could
not too
have
late.
Me.
Just put it on the back burner.
Yeah, tell
it's
my
not
wife.
Too late.
She, not too she late. Always says, if you want, Quigley South is still there. But so when I've been watching this show, and it bugged me because if you remember the pivotal scene of the movie that's called
The Ten Commandments,
he comes down from the mountain.
Yes, he does.
And there's Edward G. Robinson.
Yes.
Dathan, if you will.
Yes.
And, of course, they are all having this orgy with the golden calf.
Right.
The movie has a golden calf. How many movies have
and a slightly tamer version of an orgy than some of us are accustomed
certainly.
To.
Certainly, yeah. Right? I mean, this isn't Cinemax at 3
right.
in the morning.
Right.
And so everybody, and the people, well, you know, and Cecil B. DeMille, of course, you know,
yep.
and they were ravaging themselves in the sight of
and
God.
And is that him doing the narration?
He's the narrator.
I've heard that he is.
He's
yeah?
a narrator, although God,
yeah.
when he talks to Moses, I heard, is a combination of Charlton and Cecil. And they mixed them and they deepened them and they
wow.
put them together.
Impressive.
But my point is, so at the pivotal scene, he comes down.
Mm-hmm.
And he's not like Mel Brooks with the 15
right.
commandments
Oops.
And drops the tablet, which right. is a great scene from History of the World. So he comes out with the 10, and then, of course, you know, Moses comes down. He's been up there for months,
yeah.
apparently.
Yeah.
And he comes down, they've lost their minds.
And he's aged quite a bit.
Yes. Yeah, he was.
He's like that picture of Letterman that we saw all over the news
yes.
the other day. You go, wait, he was only up there a short time, and he looks that old.
Every time he sees God, God is not good if you from the aging. It's great to see him.
Right.
But you come away
no,
at
older.
Least 10 years in 5 minutes.
It's right. like marriage.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, it is.
But that,
for some of us, not
so,
for all of us.
So shouldn't. So they're ravaging themselves. The golden calf is being passed around. Their
yep.
people are lays are they're throwing pearls, everything. And he says, you know, Israel, how dare you? And he takes the tablets.
Yes.
And he throws them at the calf.
Yep.
And they blow up. And they burn. And so I'm sitting there going, wait a minute.
How would that happen?
Well, not only how would that happen, well, how would you part
that
a sea?
That movie's fake.
Yeah, I mean,
what a fake movie.
Don't forget
movie.
The hail even had fire in it when the plagues came down.
Right.
But my point is, the movie, you've just destroyed, there's a whole Indiana Jones film based on this Ark of the Covenant.
Right.
He just destroyed the tablets.
Yep.
How could you, how do you reconcile that?
You can't.
So now, and it's always bugged me for 50 years, whenever I've been watching this movie. They did such a cheat when he can't go into the promised land.
Yeah.
He's all white now.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, now he's even older.
Yep.
He can't go to the promised land. He says to Joshua, John Derek, Bo Derek's husband, take this and put this in the Ark of the Key. It's like the Dead Sea Scrolls or something.
Right.
Put this in the Ark of the Covenant with the ten with the tablets that God rewrote.
Oh, oh.
But my point is they made God rewrite the commandments.
Right,
so the ones we have aren't even the originals. They're a second, and God's like, well, wait, what did you do with the ones I just gave you?
Well, they didn't have Kinko's then. You know that, right? Kinko's didn't come around
exactly.
till years later.
So God's like, wait, I gave you these tablets.
You ruined it.
You ruined them? It's been 10 minutes.
Right.
Well,
irresponsible,
yeah.
Heston.
No wonder why you're not getting to the promised land. You want to know why?
That's why. All right, hold that thought.
Yeah.
Jim Toronto's here. Elton
out of,
Jim.
Shot out of a cannon.
Shot out of a cannon. If you want to jump in, we're 312-981-7200. We're talking about our love-hate relationship with the Ten Commandments.
The film. Not
the film.
Yeah.
Oh, the Ten Commandments themselves.
Those are my favorite commandments.
Those are the best commandments ever. You want to jump in, please do. We'll be back after this. It's Bill F. and Jim Toronto in for Wendy Snyder on WGN. That pretty voice you heard, besides my own, is that of Jim Toronto's. Elton Jim, as you know and love him.
Yes, and in fact, I have to say that I appreciate the invite.
Of course.
You should know, though,
yeah,
that I'm the equivalent of, if I was a lawyer,
yeah,
I would be an ambulance chaser.
Would you be considered that?
But I am a radio personality ambulance chaser. Yes. You don't even know this.
Yes.
But every day, if people say, what have you been up to
mm-hmm.
since you haven't been on the radio regularly? And I say, there's an Argo T that is connected to
it's
the
in our
Tribune.
Building.
I go there every morning
mm-hmm.
at about 5:45.
Yeah.
If you sit at the right table,
yeah,
you can look right through into the lobby of the Tribune.
Oh, really?
I stay there until you come in,
yeah,
you and Wendy,
yeah,
and I make sure everybody is in that day.
Good move.
If they're not,
yeah,
then I call upstairs.
Oh, you do?
Oh, by any chance, you need a fill-in. And then when I see the midday shift is there,
yeah,
then I go and I get one of my refrigerator cardboard boxes, and I go down Lower Michigan,
yeah,
and then I scout out and surveil the employee parking lot
uh-huh.
to make sure if Roe or Justin show up.
Maybe they're not coming
and maybe
in.
They're not coming in. If right. I don't see them drive in or pull up, then I'll make a call again.
It's
by
weird.
Any chance.
We keep getting pizzas with his resume on top.
What?
Like, Jim, we know what you
That's
do.
That's crazy.
We're familiar.
That's crazy.
But you probably haven't seen me because I've become very good at this.
You blend in. You're like a chameleon.
Yeah.
With radio.
So
That's
people
fantastic.
Say, what do you do all day? I don't
now
even
we know.
Now you know. Either that or I go to Dylan's Sweet Shop.
Just down the block.
Yes. And
that's fantastic.
Yeah,
but we got to keep busy.
But I must say, you are very punctual, by the way.
Oh, well, thank you for saying that.
I've got a
chart on me.
I've got a whole notebook. And I must say that you really must. You are very regimented.
I appreciate
you
that.
You show up
thank
at the
you,
same
Jim.
Time.
I don't like to shock anybody. All right, let's talk. We're talking about the movie The Ten Commandments, which has been shown. We're figuring somewhere around 40 years in a row now.
At least.
On ABC,
at
always
least,
on ABC.
If not more.
Yeah.
I mean, I know. I mean, I'm 52. How are you? We're on the
I'm
same
the same exact age.
So I know I've been watching this since I was in grammar school.
Yeah.
So this has to be over, you know, 40-some years.
But you said this earlier, but I want to expand on it just a little bit. For a network to run a movie that's that old and that questionably awful, and it's at Christmas time you get not only specials, you know,
right.
the Rankin Bass specials, but also It's a Wonderful Life. A network will take that 3-hour block and put on a Jimmy Stewart movie from the 40s. That never happens any other time of the year but Easter and Christmas.
Exactly. And as I said, and especially, you know, the thing about It's a Wonderful Life, it became this classic.
Sure.
I don't know. I think that the Ten Commandments is known because it's on every year. It wasn't beloved.
Right.
And then it had to be shown.
Yeah.
It's just kind of shown.
Right. And no one's requesting it. No one's begging ABC, please put the Ten Commandments.
But like I
on.
Said, I went last week
to
make sure. And I said 20's got to be on. But there was Saturday in the thing. And I have to say that I have a DVD version, of course.
You could watch it whenever you wanted to.
But they don't really cut too much out, except there is about a 20-minute overture in the theaters. And there was an intermission, which they cut out.
It's so long.
And I think there's even an introduction by Cecil B. DeMille.
Oh, really?
Who directed it.
Yeah.
And these are movies that they don't really make these anymore, which might be good or bad.
No,
I don't know.
Good. It's good.
But this, you can see that this is a movie that, you know, Cecil B. DeMille was notoriously a narcissist. I mean,
sure.
He wanted. So he was out to make an epic.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was no.
He succeeded in that.
Yeah, he did by that. But
who of the actors, who do you think? Because if you've not seen the movie, it's an absolute lesson on overacting. Do you have a favorite or two?
Well, I'll tell you. I mean, of course, you have to love Charlton Heston.
Always.
Who apparently was cast because he resembled the Michelangelo statue that's in Italy.
Oh, of Moses.
And he said he looks like Moses.
Wow. Well, that was a good move then.
I mean, you got to love. I am the Lord thy God. You know, I mean, he's
right.
just. He's
he didn't
so great.
Speak that biblical.
No.
He spoke more modern day.
Obviously, as Billy Crystal has pointed out, Edward G. Robinson, Little Caesar being in this makes no sense. But then there's a very young and effervescent Vincent Price.
Yes.
As Baca, the master builder.
Yeah.
Be careful how you finish that phrase. And but if my all-time favorite, and I actually have a drinking game. So here's, folks, if you don't watch this every year, you have to. If you say, well, this looks like a schlocky old Hollywood movie.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, then I'm gonna do it for you millennials who always have to have a beer in your hand
mm-hmm.
that has some, you know, hibiscus in it or something.
Mm-hmm.
In my day, we had old style and we liked it.
Some orange peel, maybe?
Yeah, exactly.
A little bit of orange peel?
So here's the thing. You do a drinking game. Ann Baxter, who actually played Olga on Batman.
Right.
With Vincent Price.
Right, right.
Who was
Egghead. Yeah.
Yeah. So Ann Baxter, beautiful woman in her time.
Stunning.
Yeah. She plays Nefertiti.
Yeah.
Be careful
they
when you say that. Yeah. She plays Nefertiti, and she's so horny for Moses. It's unbelievable.
Right.
Unbelievable.
Right.
You've never seen anything like it. And if you count the times that she says in this overexcited voice, "Oh, Moses."
Yes. Yes.
Take a shot.
Yep.
Now, you asked me before, if is it just Moses? If you took a drink during every time the word Moses was said,
hundreds of times,
before the overture was done,
right,
you'd be on your butt.
Right.
This way, with Ann Baxter, it's at least the first 20 minutes.
Right.
But my wife and I literally, we took a bottle of wine, and we were doing Oh Moses shots with wine.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't even think we got to Moses being cast out into the desert.
That often.
Yeah. I mean, I know. We certainly didn't get to the plagues. You know? But, I mean, so this way, if you want to find a reason, why should I watch this every year?
That's
now
why.
You've got a drinking game, but it's so overly dramatically acted.
Oh, everything.
It's everything that is bad about a good movie. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's so good. It's so bad. It's good.
Right. No, I'm with you. I love that.
And like I said, there's no better way to spend a Saturday. I mean, 4.5
I know.
I mean,
I know.
Even Ravi Bacchanal, whatever his name is, he came. You know, like, is this thing over yet?
Ravi Bashwal, by the way. Yeah. Ravi Bacchanal, yeah. Yeah, it's a long
yeah,
movie.
Yeah, I mean, they're you know, the poor.
It's
you know,
two football games. It's two back-to-back football games. That's how long the movie is.
6 o'clock.
I know.
It was still light out.
I know.
When it started.
It's a long day. Jim Toronto is here. Elton Jim, to those of you who know and love him. We're going to take a quick break. Steve with the news, and then a lot more show ahead. Stay here. It's Bill and Jim in for Wendy on WGN. Oh, thank you so much, Steve. It's me, Bill Leff. Wendy Snyder has the day off. She is being filled in by Jim Toronto.
Well, you know what I did? Also, what I told you, I hang out to see if people are
on time
show for work. And then if not, I call to see if they need to fill in.
Yeah.
What I also do when people aren't looking here is I think it may have worked with Wendy. I lick the doorknobs.
Oh, you do that.
So sometimes people will get sick when they don't
you
know.
Fill in
and
for
then,
them.
Of course, once again, is Wendy? How did that happen?
I wonder how that happened,
do
but
you
you're close by.
Yes. Where are you? I'm in Dargo if you need me.
Jim, this is a good thing. We're getting a lot of texts that all ask the same question.
Yeah.
Does Jim Toronto do kids' parties? I'm not sure why people want to know that, but are you available for children's parties?
Are you saying that my...
I don't know why
relates to a 5-year-old.
We have several techs who are all asking.
Really?
Yeah, I have a 9-year-old who's having a birthday party in June. Is Jim Toronto available for that party? Yeah, several of these want to know.
I do balloon animals.
Well, maybe that's
and I also create them too.
Maybe those are kids who are going to decide not to send their children to parties.
That could be right. Steve might be onto something.
Well, you know what? I do have a side business. I have done 2 marriages. In the last
you've
year.
Performed a marriage or two?
I have performed two marriages. I have performed my godson's marriage in January of 2015. And on this past Valentine's Day, I performed a gay marriage.
You did?
So
now
I just
these
need
are...
any transgenders out there? Because I need to get the Holy Trinity.
We'll give you... Yes, you do. So these are non-denominational
right.
weddings.
It's the Universal Church.
Universal Church.
And I even bought one of those white. Are you Catholic or no?
I'm not.
Okay.
No.
When the Catholic, if you ever see on television.
I went to a Catholic school, so I'll know what you're
well, you know, like they have, like when the altar boys, when we grew up, you had the black robe with the white little doily thing that they wore.
Yeah, yeah,
well, they have the longer doily,
which
like bishops will wear.
Oh.
Or like when Supich is coming down the aisle.
Yeah.
These guys like around him, like his bodyguards, they wear this thing called a surplice. Which is like this beautiful lacy.
You know, you were just wrong on so many points.
But I bought myself a surplice.
You have your own surplice.
I have my own surplice, and so when I perform these ceremonies, I come out with my surplice.
And what do you, like when you do one of these ceremonies, what goes on? Like what sort of thing do you say to people?
Oh, not a dry eye in the house.
It's that touching?
It's
is it? Yeah.
Unbelievable. I had a friend, this is my godson's wedding, and he is the son of one of my very good friends dating back to high school.
Yeah.
So his grandfather, my godson's grandfather, comes up to me, and he knew me since I was 14 years old.
Yeah.
So he knows I'm kind of a goofball.
Uh-huh.
And he goes, what?
Yeah.
You're doing
the
this?
Wedding?
Yeah. Like, you know, he looked at me like, and then of course I come out with this surplus on. So now it's like, is this just going to mean, because I said, you know, if you can, I need a hydraulic lift and a backlight with my surplus to make
for the
an
full
entrance.
Effect. Yeah,
I'm talking about Charlton Heston, right? I should talk. And so, and when I got done though, because I mean, I love my godson. I don't have any kids, so I like my own son. And,
yeah.
And so I really put a lot into this. And when I was done with the ceremony,
everybody was moved.
This guy comes up to me and he goes, wow. He said, that was the best wedding.
Really?
Because he thought I was going to go, you know, good afternoon, ladies and germs. You
right.
Know, do some shtick.
No, like, it's you take it
real.
Seriously.
And when I did this, the marriage that I did, the gay marriage was my wife's uncle and his partner who had been together for 20 years.
Yeah.
It was a small ceremony in their home. But I just put together a small little talk about the paths and how they got to this point and the struggles that they had to go through and now that they could, you know, do this legally. And it was, I thought it was a nice,
that's fantastic.
The path that led them. Yeah. So I enjoyed
it. Have you done any brisses as of yet?
I am going to Moyle School.
You are going to, you're attending a Moyle school.
Although I am a little shaky.
I don't think that'll hold you back at all.
But I will do bar mitzvahs. That's easy.
Over the years, I've been asked twice to do wedding ceremonies. One for my niece and her now husband, and one for a guy, a friend of mine from school, from high school, who got remarried. And in both cases, here's what came to my mind, Jim. And I'm not belittling you at all. Believe me. But I thought, if I'm doing the wedding ceremony, what chance does this have of success? There's no chance at all.
Well, not even that, but it's the weirdest part is, you know, this is a legal thing.
It is legal, yeah.
You know, I mean, there's the emotion involved in all of it, but this is a legal document. I mean, when they're done, I have to sign the marriage license.
And then it's official.
And then it makes it official.
It's real.
And I'm sitting there going, I'm making this official?
So a major part of two people's life is dependent upon you.
Yeah, and I mean, all I did was go on line and pay $35.
Right.
And somebody sent me the certificate, although a very nice laminated parking pass, which I don't think the Chicago Police Department will validate.
No, they won't.
But they say, put this in your window.
Right. Like it'll save you a ticket.
Yeah. But that's the weird thing. So I'm sitting there, and then the best part, it says name, and then it says affiliation.
Oh.
And so then I'm thinking to myself, well, I can't put Catholic because I'm not. So then I have to, that's right, my universal
Church
of the world or whatever I
right,
am.
Right,
and,
right.
And it says on the card, I have it in my wallet because you never know. I could be walking down the street and someone might
somebody
like
will demand to be married.
It says you can do baptisms, funerals. I mean.
Wow. Wow.
But it seems so fake when I'm writing
that's
my name
the problem.
On here. Yeah, I see your point. I was
that's
very.
The problem.
It didn't occur to anyone else. Jim.
Nobody. Nobody.
I was very touched when I was asked. Weren't you flattered?
Oh, flattered doesn't even begin.
Yeah, I mean, it is an unbelievable. In fact, with my godson, I've got a very close relationship with him. And I, in the back of my mind, I thought, wouldn't it be cool if he asked me to stand up?
That would be nice.
But no, let's be honest. You remember when you got married in your 20s, I assume?
Yeah.
You know, you inevitably, you pick your buddies.
Right.
That's who you're
a relative or two and some friends.
But even the relative is probably your age or younger, but it's
roughly,
not someone older.
Right, right, right.
And I thought about, I had a really favorite uncle of mine who really taught me a lot and was really an important person in my life. And I, as I got older, I said, you know, I it would have probably been such an amazing thing to have asked him.
Yep.
To have been my best man.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, he probably would have been like, wow. But, you know, at that time, I was too immature to really realize it.
Yeah.
You know? And then he passed away, and I still miss him very much. And I said to myself, gosh, I wish I would have had the, you know, the maturity at that time to pick him.
Yeah.
So in my mind now, I'm thinking, boy, I can't, if he doesn't ask me to stand up, I can't be mad because I didn't think of that.
Right.
And he's in his 20s. And, you know,
you want to be surrounded by like people.
Exactly. And, and it would be weird to have me at the bachelor party.
Oh,
I
maybe.
Understand.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But my point is, you know, so I can't begrudge him if he doesn't ask me to stand up.
Sure.
And so I sort of, as they began to plan their wedding, I sort of just dropped some hints. So, who's standing up?
Right.
And, oh, yeah, well, you know, my buddy Nick. And okay, so then I realize it's not
going to be
happen.
You.
I'm like, okay, fine. And as I said, I can't be upset.
No.
At all. Just my own ego.
Sure.
You know.
Sure.
So then about a month and a half after they got engaged. It was my birthday. We went out with them and his fiance at the time. And they said, well, we got the hall.
Yeah.
And I said, oh, great. And they said, well, where are you going to get? And they said, oh, we're going to do it all in one building. You know, we'll have the wedding downstairs.
Reception upstairs.
Reception upstairs. Nice. I said, oh, so you're not going to get married in a church.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, no. And I, so now this was completely out of just my own curiosity. Because I'm thinking, okay, well, wow, a priest won't come.
Right. If it's not a church. Right.
So
is that always the case?
I think so.
Yeah, I didn't know that. Okay.
Yeah. Even with Francis, I think there's still some rules that he's not even bending.
All right.
But I said, so what do? Do you have to get a justice of the peace? Do you have to get a judge? You know, just as conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And his fiance was kind of hemming and hawing. And she wouldn't answer the question. And I kept going,
something's up.
This is not a hard question. and if you haven't thought of this,
you better.
Yeah, then yeah. I'm worried about this marriage. You know. And then she couldn't get my godson's attention because he was talking to someone else. So finally she goes, you know, Jim was just asking, who do we get to do the ceremony?
To do the ceremony, yeah.
And then all of a sudden, you know, he sort of, you know, perked and he said, well, we were hoping you would do
this.
And I was floored. I'm rarely speechless.
But that's an honor. That's a huge honor.
Completely honored. And I even said to myself, not only did he, you know, I was sort of thinking of, am I going to be a part of this wedding?
Right.
But he outdid me.
Yeah, by far.
I wasn't expecting to be the officiant. I may be an usher. Maybe a ring boy.
Did he know you had a surplus at the time?
I didn't have a surplus.
You didn't own one.
But I went and I found one on Irving Park.
Oh, the surpluses. I've been in that shop. They have a lot of them.
Now, you can't get a yarmulke there.
No,
it's
they don't sell.
Just surplus.
That's all they have.
That's all they have. It's on Irving and Pulaski in Chicago, on the northwest side. I lived in that neighborhood. I never knew this place existed. I went online like, you mean I could have had a surplus all these years?
Forever.
And I didn't even go there. I used to ride my bike there all the time.
You're wasting your time. All right, more on this and other topics. If you'd like to jump in, we'd love you to. Jim Toronto sitting in for Wendy. It's 312-981-7200. Back after this on WGN. All right, it's me, Bill Leff. Wendy has the day off, and Jim Toronto is sitting in for Wendy. That's Elton Jim, to those of you who remember him and love him here on WGN. Jim, we were asking the question. We just found out that Jim has officiated at two different weddings over the past how many years, Jim?
The last, since 2015, within the last year.
Within the last year.
Yeah.
All right, so we were trying to figure out if you're getting married in a hall or something that is not a church.
Right.
Can a priest come and officiate? Can he perform the ceremony?
Yeah.
Here's from 847. The priest is allowed to show up and participate, but cannot actually perform the marriage.
Yeah, see, I figured as much.
We had a priest and a rabbi. The priest participated, but the rabbi was the one who actually performed the marriage. Again, that's according to 847.
Thanks, 847.
Thank you, 847. That was everybody in 847 got together to send that text.
Wow, that was a lot of people.
Everybody. All right, so here's what happened with me in both cases.
Because you said you were asked.
I was asked by one of my closest friends from high school was getting remarried and wanted me to perform the ceremony. And then just months later, my niece and her fiance, now husband. So in both those cases, and try to help me figure this out because I can't figure this out, I'm not religious at all, and yet to me performing a marriage ceremony is a sham. It makes it incredible. It can't be. So I try to convince both of them to go with somebody religious, even though I myself am not religious, and we didn't have a religious person. We had a judge do my wife and my ceremony.
Oh.
So why wouldn't I just have done it instead of convince them?
You are really a modest guy.
I guess so.
You're almost like Charlie Brown. Like, if I'm going to do this wedding, good grief, I got to rock.
Right.
It's going to be a failure if I do it.
No, I became. I started quoting scripture and telling them passages from the Old and New Testament.
The funny thing is, I didn't invoke the higher power at all.
No.
No.
Mine
was about them.
Right.
And my relationship with them and stories about them. And I mean, I didn't shy away not from it, but I felt, to your point, for me to invoke God in some kind of way that would show some validity.
Yeah.
That's not my role. I that's counterfeit.
Right.
For me to start saying, you know, and when the supper was ended, he took the cup. Again, he gave you thanks and praise.
That's not you.
Although, as I said, though, I think if I would have become a priest, Supich would not. Right now, I wouldn't even be here.
It would be, really?
I'd be down the street, yeah, in holy name.
It would be yours.
Oh, I think I would be.
I was so sure that if I performed the ceremony, that in either of those couples' cases, they would have gotten a letter from the state at some point saying, we just reviewed the tape. Who did your ceremony?
Well, I'm still waiting for that. As I said, when I signed both of these marriage documents, they have to file it with the circuit, you know, with the clerk.
Right.
This is a legal. And I'm sitting there going, are they going to get a letter like in 2 weeks going, there's no universal.
We can't have this.
You guys aren't married.
Right.
You got Elton Jim.
Yeah, that's not going to work.
Although it does work for me because I'm Reverend Jim.
Oh, that's even better. Well, hasn't it been kind of a mainstay of every sitcom that's on for more than 3 or 4 seasons?
No.
To at some point have an episode where some beloved characters realize that the marriage they thought they've had for 35 years didn't actually happen.
Dating back to Dick Van Dyke.
Right. They all do that at some point.
And then they have.
There's always an episode where someone has a baby in a place they're not supposed to have a baby.
I think Bob Newhart had to wind up.
I think there was an episode of Bob Newhart.
I mean, yeah. No, for sure, Dick Van Dyke. But yeah, right. It is a good staple.
We're getting some calls. Let's take them. You know our number. It's 312-981-7200. We'll start out with Kathy. Kathy, hi. It's Bill and Elton Jim sitting in. How are you?
Fine. How are you?
Excellent. What's up, Kath?
Several years ago, my cousin lived on the south side, and when she celebrated her 25th wedding anniversary, a priest was able to come and say the anniversary mass at their home.
I can see them doing an anniversary mass. I'm sure that's within their job qualifications, but I think the problem would be the actual marriage ceremony. That might be sticky.
Yeah, let no man cast asunder. What is that like?
That's what Jim says, Kathy. I don't know if it's true, but he doesn't want men casting us asunder. So, whatever that means. So they did. It was a success, obviously, right? Everything
yes,
went.
It was.
Well,
mm-hmm.
All right, good. Good. I'm glad to hear that. Thank you, Kathy.
Yeah, I don't think.
You're welcome.
Have a good day.
I don't think that you could do that to legitimize it. The anniversary is a celebration,
right? But just marking the occasion, but the occasion itself
has to be.
You probably want to go.
In the eyes of the church.
I would imagine. Mike knows a little something about this. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Yeah, marriage is a civil function. It's not. It's not really religious. In order to get married, you have to get a license through the county or a state.
Right.
And then at the end of marriage, you have to go through divorce court.
Oh,
it's true.
So it is more legal than religious.
When you get married in church, it's just like a blessing, I think. It's
right.
Not really. It's the state that defines marriage, and it's the state that approves them, and you have to go through a divorce court at the end of the thing. It's really a civil contract.
Sure.
So Mike, then, is it fair to say, then, when you actually apply for your marriage license, and you get it from when you go downtown, is it fair to say that most likely whenever you get that marriage license, you're married? Or
without the ceremony you're talking
about?
Yeah.
Since it's a legal document, I went to the. Am I married then?
I think somebody still has to officiate.
That's possible, but for instance, in France, they make you get married in court before you go to church because they want to emphasize the fact that it's a civil function.
How about that?
Those socialists.
The courts are just, I mean, the state is just giving the church the authority to do it.
Sure, absolutely. Because, well, Mike, thank you.
So you're going to have a lot of legitimacy to do it.
You could do it, yeah. All right, well, thank you, Mike. Appreciate it.
Well, think about it. I mean, you do get married by a justice of the peace or a judge, and those are legal representatives as well.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, no question.
I'm just wondering now, am I really, because I think, isn't there like some waiting period you get your marriage license, and then it's good for 60 days
or something? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I'm wondering, when I get that, am I really married?
Oh, I wonder.
Because it sounds like.
Although, I always thought somebody needed to pronounce you man and wife, and then it becomes.
You need to sign it with witnesses, right?
Right. There has to be a witness.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah, but so what? I mean, you don't have to. You could do it.
Right.
Just find two people in the courthouse.
Right. Right, right, right.
That day.
So, I mean, like the last caller just said, France makes you do it the courthouse first. Well, we technically do as well.
Yeah. Yeah. How about that? All right. Well. We're learning stuff, Jim.
Well, this is not just frivolity.
No, there's some learning to be had.
People said he's going to be on. They were
come
gonna,
on.
Now look at what's happening. We're talking about the sanctity
it's
of marriage.
It's education.
Here.
That's what it is. All right, we're going to take a break. Steve has the news, and then more show coming your way. It's Bill Leff and Jim Toronto in for Wendy on WGN. Steve, thank you so much.
Chasey and the Sunshine Band.
For you, shoes. We do this for you.
Boogie Shoes.
We pull out the hits for you, Jim Toronto. Jim is sitting in for Wendy today. Wendy will be back tomorrow. If nothing else, Jim, you and I are slaves to fashion. Would you agree?
Especially if people are watching the video today.
Yes.
We are basically dressed
We look like it's same. Some sort of a Paris fashion show. Both Jim and I were runway models at some point in our careers.
Although my hat always, this hat, people have a hard, I mean, you wear a baseball cap.
More days than not, yeah.
I have this little seaman hat.
Yes.
It looks like a... Like a navy,
you may have been
like the Old Spice.
Remember recently.
Remember the Old Spice guy?
Yeah,
it's one of those.
Yeah,
or maybe a robber.
Yeah, one or the other.
Now, some people say it looks like a yarmulke or a beanie, which I don't like that at all.
No, it's the hat that says I just did time at sea.
You prefer the Old Spice guy to a yarmulke or beanie?
Well, no, because it's not a religious statement.
Angry Jewish calls on lines 1, 3, 6, and 8.
No, it's this is a rugged hat. I mean, when people see me, they think
there's a man.
Yeah, there's a rugged guy.
Right.
You know.
Can you find one of those people for me? Because I'd like to talk to them.
There's got to be someone.
There's got to be
somebody out there.
See me,
Rip Taylor, somebody
guy.
Like that. Yeah. Oh, hello, Frisco.
Now, do you know, you're talking about the Old Spice guy. Do you know whose father that is in real life?
Oh, come on.
Come on, you can
Bill,
do this. You
Matthew
can do this.
Perry.
Matthew Perry, his father was the Old Spice
Bill,
guy.
You know, one day, if I ever sit in with you again, we should really, you should get somebody.
Yeah. Yes.
And we should do a competition.
A trivia off?
With trivia off.
I bet you
it would be.
You're very good.
Because I have to tell you, I was so tempted. I was listening to you guys on Friday, and you were doing the 100 most memorable lines
in
from
movies. Yeah.
That was so embarrassing.
Embarrassing in what way?
Not to you, but Steve Bertrand
and Wendy and Kevin.
Although Kevin actually did the best, and he didn't even see any of the movies.
Kevin admitted, though, he was Googling the lines.
I was like, how do you not know these lines?
I know.
You had to have been biting your lip.
I was a little embarrassed.
Yeah, I was going to call in and say, Bill, you should have saved this bit for Monday.
I'm sorry. No, you're right. You're absolutely
Steve
right.
Steve did all right.
Steve did go, yeah, and Wendy actually shocked me because she only sees one or two movies a year.
Right.
So she got a couple of them I didn't expect to get.
She made some funny noises.
She did.
And then she was getting mad at the callers.
Yeah, there was that.
Even better.
Yeah, there was an element of that.
It was
that.
Great radio, but it was embarrassing.
I get it. Well, here's what they've done over at Huffington Post. And they do this in an effort to help people, but I don't know if they're helping or hurting. They're warning people, mostly men over the age of 40, that if you're wearing any of these items, you're making a serious fashion mistake, all right? So they're saying, again, these are things that guys might be wearing, but once you hit 40, you want to stop wearing these things.
Everything on that list about a man over 40 is in that list.
Everything.
Everything about a man over 40 that he should not wear is in that
list. Ooh, you are right, Holston Breath. All right. Tell me if you wear any of these with any regularity, because you're going to have to stop, Jim. That's what the list is.
Over 40.
Yeah, over 40. Everyone in this list.
In that list.
Yes. Baseball caps worn backwards. And
yo,
then it
yo,
says,
yo.
It says
yo, yo.
Afterwards.
Boy.
Or forward, actually, too. Now, that's offensive.
You can't. If you're over 40, you can't wear a
baseball
hat?
You're not supposed
hat?
To. It
How about
no.
Seaman hats?
Spell that for me.
S-E-A-M-A-N.
I'd never call you that to your face, but
how about a salty dog hat?
It says salty dog hats are perfectly allowable.
It's not a step up.
It says the fashion statement of the entertainment industry, the baseball cap worn backwards, has now become something of a cliche that says, I'm not Ron Howard, but I sure wish I had that guy's money. Does that what a backwards baseball hat says?
Well, first of all, Ron Howard doesn't wear them backwards either.
I don't think he did.
No.
No, he didn't. He wore it traditionally.
Yeah.
Right. But what if you're a catcher? If you're over 40 and you're a catcher, you're going to wear it backwards?
Yeah. What's J.C. Martin supposed to do?
Doesn't say.
What is George Bitterwald doing?
This is offensive to the Baron.
No, but come on. Yeah. I mean, we can't wear what? I mean, first of all, they're putting us in the dustbin then.
Right.
And that's can't wear a baseball hat?
That's what it says.
So
now backwards,
backwards,
because it's
see.
Pretentious.
Yeah, I wouldn't do backward.
But
you don't do backward.
No,
do
I don't wear backward. I used to, but people called me out on it.
Grandmaster Bill.
Right. My early rap CDs, you could see me always wearing a backwards.
When you were an MC?
Hat. Right. Not
MC,
anymore.
MC Lef?
Now, you might have to help me with this one, Jim, because I'm not sure what this means. A guy over 40 should never wear a hat that isn't a Tilly hat. T-I-L-L-E-Y. A Tilly hat.
I think that's one of mine. I don't know.
It says,
I don't know
I'm not
means.
Sure. It says a Tilly hat is a timeless statement piece.
A Tilly hat?
Yeah, you know what? There's a picture of
is
it. Can
like
I tell
the,
you?
The paperboy hat?
No.
With the little brim? No.
It's similar to the one that Norman wore on Golden Pond. It's
like the fishing hat.
Like a Gilligan.
A fishing hat.
Yeah, kind of a fishing hat. But I thought...
You are my knight in shining armor.
I thought you only started wearing those when you were over 80. 40.
Yeah.
Way over 40.
With the lures on them.
Yeah, it has lures.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a Tilly hat?
Apparently, I've never heard the phrase before.
No, I don't think you should be. I don't think you should be under 80 before you wear one of those.
The older the better for one of these hats, right? It's better. All right, we've got more of these, and if you want to jump in, please do. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Jim Toronto talking about fashion as we're
we should know.
Off to do. Back after this is WGN. It's me. It's Bill Leff and that guy there, Jim Toronto, filling in for Wendy. Wendy will be back tomorrow. We are a little confused. Jim and I, both of us over 40, have now learned that we are not allowed to wear Tilly hats. This is upsetting us, mostly because we don't know what Tilly hats are.
No, I never heard that.
But we've been informed they are not to be worn. Several texters have texted in various pictures
of a Tilly hat.
Of Tilly hats. And most, I have to be honest, most of the pictures are different from each other. But Carolyn is on the line and thinks she can explain it best. Carolyn, please tell us, what are a Tilly hat and why can't we wear them anymore?
Well, it's great to talk to you both.
Thank you.
I totally disagree with A, the list, and B, the fact that you guys can't wear Tilly hats. Tilly hats are worn by men and women of all ages. They're a timeless piece. It's the kind of hat that you see Crocodile Dundee wearing in Australia.
Oh.
It's got a really good, solid brim. You can kind of roll it up and travel with it.
It's not the fishing hat or the Gilligan's Island hat.
No.
No, not at all. It's more of kind of an outback hat that has, you know, that'll cover your face as you're out and about. It has a strap underneath your chin, so if it's super windy in a desert storm, and you know, it's not going to blow off.
Well, why can't I wear one of those?
Jim wants to wear one, Carolyn. He can wear one.
Exactly. I could wear one. I'm, you know, 41. You could wear one. Anyone could wear one. Kids, women.
They're good for everybody. Now, several people, by way of text, have said that that is a brand name. Is Tilly a brand name for a type of hat?
It is.
Yeah. Okay. And do they make anything else besides hats that we're not supposed to wear?
They do. They make clothing and some other things, but they started with one specific hat, and then as they became more popular, then they started to expand into, you know, different outlets.
Okay.
You know what? I'm thinking,
known for a hat, their specific outback hat.
I'm thinking I may have a Tilly hat because I went to Australia about 10 or so years ago.
Were you on a roustabout? Were you on a roustabout? I don't even know what those are, but I think people in Australia do participate in those.
And I bought a hat from there, and I wonder now if it's a Tilly hat.
Maybe, yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised.
Because it has a sturdy brim.
That's the first thing you need in a Tilly hat. All right. Well, Carolyn, thank you. Your expertise is amazing.
Yes, my pleasure. Talk to you.
Thank you so much. Bye.
So why did you
think she could have verified your Tilly? You could have brought it to Carolyn.
I know.
She could have verified it.
Who knew?
It's too late now.
That my Tilly hat would come in handy.
217, my husband wears nothing but Tilly hats. I'm hoping that's not true. You can't keep a job if you just show up wearing a hat.
I got one on Bleecker Street. Mine's a Trilly hat.
Oh.
It's almost a Tilly
hat. So close.
Hat. It's so much.
So close.
It's like a Kate Spade purse. $25.
All right, here are other things you're not supposed to be wearing, Jim. I know you'll agree with me on this one. Corduroy, if you're over 40, under 40, they say you're still fine. Corduroy jackets with suede patches on the elbows, is that still a thing? Do you guys still wear those? I don't know.
That seems dated to me. Corduroy, like a sport jacket?
Yeah, sport jacket, mainly of corduroy, but
I'll
with the suede patch.
I'll have to tell you, I'm using my godson, who's 30, as a model on this.
Yeah.
And I believe he does have a corduroy jacket
with patches on the sleeves.
I used to have a jacket with patches on. I love that look.
But is the patch as if to say, look, we've worn out the elbow section of our jacket and we had to patch it up? Why?
I think initially, then it was just a snobby look.
It just became the thing to do. Kevin is 29 years old. Kevin, do you own a jacket like this with patches on the sleeves?
Negative.
You do not?
Negative. Well, he dresses like you.
Yeah.
Well, he idolizes me.
He idolizes me. That's why. Yeah.
We can't wear baseball hats.
Well, he's got the good hair.
Right. Yeah, terrific hair.
He's got
Kevin.
That with the gel. And he's got product in
there's
it.
Product in the hair.
Definitely product in the hair.
I brought him some Alberto VO5 for his birthday, and he was very, very happy.
Was that in 1975?
Yes. Yes, it was.
Alberto VO5.
Well, yeah. I know a warehouse.
I never got it. I always have to three. VO three.
No, get
never
the
got
VO
up to five. Yeah. Well,
get,
you were much richer than we were.
And some dippity do. You'd be surprised at how good the dippity do is.
Or the Brill Cream.
Brill Cream will do you. What about this? Man buns are okay, but man pigtails not so much. Now, I don't think the man bun look is a good look either.
No.
I'm not sure that's
that
works.
Good for anybody.
No. Person wearing it, the person
40.
Seeing it, nobody.
I just saw a guy walking down the street here on Michigan Avenue who had one of those.
Yeah, yeah, you see it.
And I mocked him.
Every day. Did you? Openly? Yeah.
He couldn't hear me.
But. What? Right. It's easier. It's easier when you're behind a glass wall.
Especially when it's bulletproof.
Right. Now, this one I think you'll agree with me on. If you're over 40, absolutely no Speedos under any circumstances.
Once again, not a good look.
No.
For anyone.
No. No.
The Speedo. No. You know, the funny thing is, I remember I wore one. I mean, not a Speedo per se, but like not a trunk. Remember trunks?
Well, yeah, that's still what I wear. Isn't that what guys wear?
But I remember
trunks?
I was a sophomore in high school, and we went to on a Florida trip, and I wore a bathing suit that would not be a Speedo in that it wasn't like you could tell if I was circumcised or not. I mean, but it wasn't a trunk
right
type.
It was more form fitting.
Yeah.
Right.
And I look at that now, I'm like, what was I thinking?
Well, most.
But we sort of did. It was kind of in the middle at that time.
I think I always had.
A
I'm
trunk.
Trying to remember any bathing suit I ever had that wasn't more swim trunk. But yeah. Now the swim team at my high school, and I think every high school for aerodynamic reasons, they would always wear either a Speedo or a Speedo-like swimsuit.
And those things were really thin too. I mean,
right.
Those things barely.
Right.
I mean, this thing had some material to it.
Right.
It but wasn't like I was like on some French beach, like some of those old French guys who walk around with just like this thong on.
Well, you know what's funny is
the big gut hanging.
We don't do this every year, but more years than not, we vacation in Maine, and you get a lot of French Canadians who come down to Maine and you can tell when you're on the beach who are the Americans who are vacationing and who are the French Canadians who are just by the swimsuit alone. You can always tell.
Now, where do you go in Maine?
Ogunquit. Do you know that area at all?
Do you know a place called the Cliff House?
Yeah, very well.
We
very much.
There.
You do?
Yeah.
It's right
the
down
rest of us are listening.
Oh, sorry, Steve.
Did you have the turkey?
Yeah, the turkey was outstanding. Next time we go, we'll wear Tilly hats.
Of course.
We'll
I
have
can't
a good
believe that you went there.
Sorry, yeah.
I couldn't even pronounce the town when we went there.
Ogunquit.
Ogunquit.
Yeah.
It's not spelled easily.
It's right next to, most people know Kenny Bunkport.
Right.
Because there's the Bush's compound is there.
We saw that.
The hotel where they did The Shining.
The Overlook.
The Overlook, yeah. The hotel where they did The Shining is there. And also, this is my favorite one. The property, the mansion that was Collinwood in Dark Shadows is right there too.
Oh, Barnabas Collins.
We took a boat tour once, my wife and I. This was before our daughters were born. And they were showing us on the boat tour. They go, there's the Bush's compound. There's the Collinwood house. There's the Shining house. And I go, scary, scarier, scariest. And they didn't think that was really funny.
They didn't get your humor.
No, they didn't think it was funny at all.
Oh, that's so cool that you go to Maine.
Yeah.
We were going to go there this year, actually, but we decided to go to Cape Cod.
You're making Steve angry. Steve is.
That's right. Oh, you mean Mr. Travel?
Steve is right.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to Prague.
Don't. Did it have to become that? Did it have to evolve
into that?
Here's
the best part. I asked Steve about it. Before the show, I asked Steve. Oh, you know those trips?
Yeah.
He's going to Vienna and Prague.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I said, hey, I said, you know, how much is that? Because I've been to Vienna, but I've never been to Prague, and we were like, you know. And he goes, oh, yeah, he tells me the price, and he tells me what he's doing. And he goes, oh, by the way, you can't go. It's all full. He's selling me on it.
No.
And then he closes the door.
But for next
on
time, right, Steve?
I didn't say it was full. I said, we've closed it. I can't guarantee you the price. I could still get you on.
I know, but certainly didn't make that impression. You made it sound like I can't wait to spend 8 days with you.
Yeah, no, that didn't occur to me. There's plenty of room. I can get you on.
He'll get you on. Okay. Steve will get you on. BertrandTravel.com.
It's a big bus.
Right? Steve, is that the website? Is it BertrandTravel.com?
Steve Bertrand Travel.
Steve BertrandTravel.com.
I gave you a plug.
How about that?
All right. Yeah, that's a hell of a plug. There's no room.
All right, a break. We got to take a break. And then Steve has the news and then more show. It's Bill Left. Jim Toronto is sitting in for Wendy Snyder today, and it's WGN. Steve, thank you very much. It's Bill Left. Jim Toronto is sitting in. You know him as Elton Jim, longtime voice on the WGN airwaves, filling in for Wendy today. Wendy will be back tomorrow.
I'll be filling in if anybody has insomnia.
Saturday night?
Saturday morning.
Late Friday into Saturday.
But it is. It's
technically
2 a.m.
Saturday morning.
It feels like a Friday night.
Yeah.
You ever show up on the wrong day with all of that?
I have to. Oh, believe me, I have to send many texts or emails say, okay, now wait a minute. You're saying, because I almost, when I, there was about 2 days where I thought it was the other way around, just as you're saying, Steve.
Yeah.
I would have shown up the wrong day.
Sometimes you'll book a flight, it'll be like a 12:15 flight late at night, and you don't know if that means, do I show up on Tuesday or Wednesday?
Well,
I don't
because
know
is it 12 a.m. or 12? 12 a.m. Right. is the morning.
That's right.
12 p.m.
Right. Right, plus, right, right. Yeah. We were talking about fashion. It's the thing that you and I know more about than anything
well,
else.
I mean, you know me. I mean, I'm Prada.
Yep.
I'm Hermes.
Yep. And I am Jay Riggins.
Jay Riggins.
Dan
is... I'm Chess King.
I'm Chess King. Dan is on the line and has something he wanted to add really quickly. Hello, Dan.
Madigans. Hey, remember yeah. Madigans?
Yep. What's up, Dan?
Hey, I got a question. I'm a 60-year-old guy. I wear a golf cap while golfing. That's not right.
Jim says no to that. I say
well, I
yes.
I don't say no, but that's the...
Right. Oh,
that's
according to this.
It's the bad list you have there.
But you can walk around, but it's okay if you're under 40, walk around with two earrings, a nose ring, a man bun, and skinny jeans.
These kids today.
In my day.
Right, I know. I don't make the rules, Dan. I'm with you, though. I think it should be allowable. I don't
How
know.
How can anybody not wear a baseball cap? That's ridiculous.
Right.
I'm sorry.
Right. I'm with you. Dan, I'd say wear whatever makes you happy.
And the Speedos are just wrong anyway.
They are. Agreed. Thank you, Dan. Have a great week. Take care.
Yeah.
I heard something on the airwaves yesterday that made me think of you.
Uh-oh.
Dean Richards was on, and...
You get a shot of penicillin.
That's separate. Okay. That's totally separate. Right. Dean is heading out. He's always wanted to go to Cuba, and as you know, that
yeah.
is now going to be a thing, that we can visit Cuba, right?
Yeah.
So the Rolling Stones just performed there, and he was talking to a guy who had just seen the Rolling Stones perform in Cuba.
Right.
And the guy said to Dean, I've seen them many times before. This is the 78th time I've gone to see the Rolling Stones. So then I know you, and I know you have that same thing where there are a couple of performers that you've seen perform. Elton John, how many times?
So he saw the Stones 78 times?
78 times.
And he was bragging.
Yes. That's nothing compared to you.
What a neophyte.
Because?
Okay, take his 78.
Yeah.
Double it.
Yeah.
And add another 20 or so.
And that's how many times you saw...
I've seen Elton. I just came back from Grand Rapids last Wednesday, in fact.
Yeah.
163. Thank you.
163 times to see Elton John.
Yes, since 1976. First one time I saw him, 76 at the old stadium. And since then, I've seen him 163 times.
How about that? How about that? All right. Now, he's not the only one for you, because I know that you go to see Bruce Springsteen often as well.
As I'm wearing my River hoodie.
Mm-hmm.
From the Bruce Springsteen River Tour this year.
Mm-hmm.
And I just saw that show twice. I saw that once here in Chicago in January and just saw it up in Milwaukee earlier this month. And he's at 59.
59 times to see Bruce Springsteen.
And the added attraction of that is I have worn the same pair of boots to every one of the Bruce Springsteen shows.
Because
they are the Bruce Springsteen boots, like those remember those black biker boots with the silver round buckle on the side?
Right.
Yeah, that's so I've been
Are those
working.
Tony Lama? Are we talking Lama?
I don't know what those
Who makes
are.
Those?
I don't know where I got them, but they are
so
the same pair.
Bruce Springsteen 59 times.
And Elton 163. And I've already got tickets in hand for next month in April for Vegas to see Elton. And
you
that's going to be a special show, because I've only done this a couple times thanks to the airlines. I usually will fly in that day.
Mm-hmm.
These are all like one day trips. I mean, I don't
fly to the city they're performing in, see the show, fly back same day.
No, well, I usually stay over one, but for Vegas, because they do have American does have a, you know, what's the thing, the red eye.
Okay, yeah,
that leaves at 12:15.
Yeah.
A.M., as you just said.
Yeah.
I don't know when to book a flight.
Yeah.
I had to go through that. I had to make sure I was on the right. I'm not leaving at noon, right?
Right.
Because Elton's concert will start at 7:30. It's 2 hours long. It gets done at 9:30. And then I will hop. And so I am not getting a hotel room. I've got a plane that gets me in at Vegas at 3. I will kill 4.5 hours.
Right.
Which you can do in Vegas.
They'll have stuff, yeah.
And then I will see the show. And then I will get in either a cab or a shuttle.
Yeah.
And I will go to, and I will get home at 6 a.m.
All right. This is the question I have. And believe me, I don't want you to take this the wrong way, because you're obviously a fan of both.
There is nothing that you can say that is going to embarrass me.
What is it about, because I thought this yesterday with the guy who's seen the Rolling Stones all the times. for me, I've seen Billy Joel twice, and I would go see Billy Joel a third time.
Wow, you're
but
crazy.
Then, I know.
You're nuts.
But then I'd feel like I don't want to overdo it. What's going on in a show that you would want to see the same show? And I know they changed the running order.
Although Elton really doesn't.
He doesn't
very
change
often.
The running order.
Yeah, I mean, right. Springsteen, to be honest with you, I've seen him 59 times, and I have never seen the same show. He changes his show night tonight. He'll play some of the
hits are being played just in a different order.
Or he will switch up different songs. Yeah. You know, he'll play a certain segment of the set will be the same, but then he will take requests from people with signs, and it's a very different show. And throughout his whole career, I've seen that. But
and sometimes Springsteen will play a song about cars and then a song about New Jersey, and then the next night it's a song about New Jersey and then a song about cars. He'll switch it up.
It's all about the sequencing.
Right.
It's like, wow, he did it now? That's why you come two nights.
Right. But are you getting a vastly different experience?
No, here's what it is, and I will tell you. First of all, my first argument to you would be, what is your favorite movie or TV show? And you don't know, I'm gonna put you on the spot, but I'm saying
The Godfather.
Okay. Have you seen it more than once?
Yes.
Have you seen it 10 times?
I've seen The Godfather probably 7 or 8 times.
Okay. Why? What was the question you asked me?
But there's a difference between 7 or 8 and 163.
I understand that, but the other side of the coin is, at least when I've gone, like every time. When Vito Corleone is by
no, I haven't. I didn't see that scene.
when he's by the tomato patch,
don't do it.
He always dies, right? Every time you see that
spoiler
movie.
Alert.
Spoiler alert. If you haven't seen The Godfather, I want to talk to you. But anyway, so you know, but whereas with mine, Elton might throw in a little piano flourish, or a different solo,
right?
And I'll be
but
honest,
is that worth $80?
Well,
to...
I understand. You know, to me, I'll tell you, we are always connected, I think, to whatever, whether it's music, television, movies, a lot of times of what we grew up with.
Right, sure, of course.
And when you and I grew up in the mid-70s, Elton was the Michael Jackson of his era.
Without a doubt.
And people can't really get a handle on that. I mean, I saw a statistic at one point that he sold 2% of all the records sold in the world.
Elton John did.
Yeah, at one time. So he was huge.
Yeah.
And you could not turn a radio station on without hearing him.
It's an impressive body of work.
Yeah.
You can't argue that.
And he's in here, you know, 4.5 decades later. So
right.
My point is, I grew up liking that music when I listened to it on WLS and WCFL.
Yeah.
And then bought the albums and then, of course, the flamboyance and the costumes and all that and played into it. Plus, you know, he was cool at that time. It was cool to like him. And so I think that now, obviously, you grew up the same time I did.
Mm-hmm.
You heard that music.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't go to 163 concerts.
Right.
But so, hey, look, I am somebody, at the very least, I'm loyal.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
You know, I have many of the same friends. I still follow Elton. I still follow Bruce. Been married for 25 years. I still like the same places to go to eat. And so my point is, when I find something, I still have the same mistresses.
Yeah.
You know, all the same stuff.
You're very loyal.
Yes. And but my point is, I when I like something, I really like it.
Right.
And I guess there is something, I'll be honest with you, and I'm not just saying this to, when I just saw him last week, when he comes out,
you get a flutter in your heart.
I get like a goosebump moment, and there is memories of that music, and I mean, I've been lucky enough to have met him 3 or 4 times.
He's the one I believe, and I have a texter that actually says you are called Elton Jim because of him. He's the one who gave you that name.
No, Gary did.
Oh, Gary did.
Yeah, Gary
oh,
said,
I thought
yeah,
it was
no.
All right.
No, but what Elton did though, when I saw my 150th concert here at the Allstate Arena, and it's up on YouTube. If you hit Elton Jim, you'll find
it
up there.
Yeah,
because somebody recorded it. I had a sign that said, "This is my 100th," and he said, because I know some guys in the band and everything, and I've met him a few times, but I'm not like we're big buddies or anything. But he said before your song, he said, "There's someone in the audience tonight, Jim, who's been to 150 shows." And so, thank you so much, and
please accept this Tilly hat as a token of my esteem.
And then he told the security guards where to get me. But so I've had some interest. I've had an interesting situation in that I've written 8 of the programs that were sold at his concerts.
Oh, really?
Yeah, like the concert.
Yeah,
program.
Sure.
I've written 8 of those in the last 15 years.
That's impressive.
So I have had a connection with him, but the fact of the matter is that music, like, for instance, we had Easter at our house. Right?
Yeah.
Saturday was before Ten Commandments at 6. We cleaned the house.
Yeah.
And I just said, you know what? We're going to do this for 2 or 3 hours, whatever it's going to be. And I just started with his first album and started playing
his
album
all the way through.
All the way through. I just, there's something about the music. I know people go, well, how could you like Springsteen and then Elton John? They're so different. And my iPod has 24,000 songs. I've got Sex Pistols to Pavarotti. I like a ton of music. The Elton music, I think I grew up with it. It was there. There's a connection. I love the lyrics by Bernie Taupin. There's a point where I can't explain it anymore. There is just something.
But there's a big jump.
Why do you like vanilla, you know, or chocolate?
But there's such a big jump between enjoying the music and playing it in the background while you're cleaning the house and traveling to another city, even though you've seen somebody 160 times and you go, wow, he's in Tucson, Arizona. I've never seen him. I should really go see his show.
Well, you know
Tucson.
What I also like about it, too, is, and I, you know, once people say, well, how do you afford this? Well, first of all, you know, I don't have
government
any kids.
Funding.
I don't have any kids. So that helps.
Yeah.
You know, and.
You had kids and you sold them for Elton John tickets. I remember hearing. Wait, hold that thought. Yeah. There's people on the line who want to jump in too. I'm just curious if you've seen somebody or something.
Yeah, I bet you I'm not alone here.
I know you're not alone. Scott, stay on the line because you're a good example of this. 312-981-7200. If you've seen something multiple times, what's in it for you? What are you getting out of it to see something 150 or 160 times? We'll take those calls and texts in just a little bit. It's Bill Leff and Jim Tirano sitting in for Wendy Snyder on WGN.
He played this, by the way.
Bruce Springsteen did?
Yes, I saw him in concert, and he played this song.
Now, I'm not familiar with this. I only know...
Well, this is Born to Run. Wow.
I've not heard this before. I like this. This could be a hit.
See?
This could be a huge hit. Jim Tirano's here. He's filling in for Wendy Snyder. Jim has seen Elton John 163 times. He has seen Bruce Springsteen 59 times. Is that in a row, Jim?
No.
Back after back after back? No.
No, but this has been a great year. I've seen Bruce and Elton sometimes within the same week.
Wow. Wow, wow, wow. The question I'm asking is, why? Like, if you've seen a guy once, maybe twice, isn't that enough? What are they giving you that you haven't seen before? Listen to some of these people. I want to start out with Scott. Scott, who have you seen multiple times, and again, why?
Okay, the band is Rush. I've seen them 62 times.
Oh, that's silly.
And it's something that happens in your youth. The first time you go to see them, the first time I saw Rush was at the Aragon Ballroom back in 1977.
Yeah.
And then, was blown away by what I had seen. And the music relates to me in my life. And as the band grew and toured along, there's certain lyrics and certain songs that just happen to be very touching to me as I grew up.
Like Bytar the Snow Dog.
There's a good example. But if Geddy Lee were to run into you, let's say it was your birthday and Geddy Lee ran into you, would there be any acknowledgement? He doesn't know you. Does he know that you're even in existence or not?
Absolutely not. I met him once. It was at a record signing and got to say hello. That was it. And I was happy for that. I don't know what to tell you.
You can't explain it. Don't even try. I know what you're saying. You can't explain it. You just know you have to do it.
And Jim,
right?
And here's the part that's going to happen to you eventually. Eventually, they're going to retire, and as Rush did this year.
Yeah.
You may have one or two opportunities where they may get together for one show, and that'll be it.
Yeah.
Right.
Oh, believe me. Elton.
It's definitely it's a chapter of your life that closes, and it's kind of sad.
Yeah, I mean, he just turned 69 last week. So,
he won't do this forever. No, I get that part of it. All right, Scott. Well, thank you very much. I understand it a little bit better. Thank you very much. Let me get one or two more in really quickly. CeCe, I'm reading this on the screen, but I this doesn't seem right. This is a typo. Who have you seen and how many times?
Todd Rundgren for over 200 times.
Wow.
Over 200 times to see Todd Rundgren. And the reason is...
first time was in 1973.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How come? What is it about him that you find that appealing to see that many times?
Oh, my God. His music, his voice, his lyrics, it just... I say it's my drug of choice.
Oh.
Everybody else wants to go off and do other things. Yeah, this is what I do.
CeCe, I know this won't change your mind about Todd Rundgren, but I have to say, in all the people I've ever interviewed in my life, he was easily among the top three rudest people I've ever interviewed. He was awful, awful, awful.
He's a smartass for real.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah, but you guys kind of got to understand his sense of humor, and you probably brushed him the wrong way, and he decided to put you in your place.
Yeah.
Oh, can't we still be friends?
That's what I'm hoping. Todd Rundgren, I can't stay mad at you. All right. Well, thank you. And Cece, you're going to continue to see Todd Rundgren, right? This isn't going to stop anytime soon. Yeah.
We're both really old, but as long as he keeps going out there doing it, I got to keep going to see it.
No, I get it. I totally get it. All right, Cece, thank you very much.
Him, you're right. You just got to do it, right?
Right. I wish I had a choice.
There is no choice.
It's an obligation.
I get it. All right.
It is what it is.
All right. Thank you, Cece. Take care. Yeah, he was so unbelievably rude
to me. Was he really?
Yeah.
That's too bad, because I really like Todd
Rundgren's
music.
Textbook rude. Unbelievable.
I like his music.
So you will continue to do that? Like, there's no stopping point? You're not shooting for an even 200 with Elton John?
Well, so what happened was, I was at 135, and I was about 48 years old.
Yeah.
And I said to myself, you know, because Elton tours quite a bit.
Yeah.
And I said, if I play my cards right here, I created a quest of my own.
Yeah.
It was 150 by 50 to see 150 shows.
By the time you hit 50 years old.
By the time I was 50, so which I did.
Yeah.
And so then, after that happened, I said, okay, 200 by 60.
That seems realistic.
So if I do 5 a year for 10 years.
You can do that.
I can get, if he's still playing.
Right. And then you get some sort of a badge or a medal, don't you?
Yeah, I have my little red vest. I put it right next to my Weeblow.
Bill and Jim, I have seen the play Forever Plaid 9 times in Chicago.
Wow.
That seems doable. Yeah. It's not outrageous.
If you like acapella.
And who doesn't?
Yeah.
Who doesn't? Well, I understand it a little bit more now.
I wish I could. I do. You know, there's a point where I can't explain it to you. And you told me that you have 11 cases
of toys and action figures and stuff.
And when it comes down to it, you cannot explain to me
why
you need that. You know that there's one Holy Grail toy that you would
love. Yeah, of course.
And you can't. And if you told me that, I'd say
what's wrong with him? Yeah, I know. Everyone's got a glitch in their brain for something.
But
like
thank God,
this.
It is, you know what? From my standpoint, it has gotten me off the couch.
Sure.
It's got no. Seriously, what did you do this weekend? I was in Vegas. What did you do? Oh, we went to the mall.
It's not the set. No, I get that.
So
I understand that.
It's gotten me to exceed a lot of the cities.
Yep.
You know.
Yep.
So I've had a great time.
I do. I understand it a lot more now. Jim, thank you.
Plus,
by the way,
to see Benny and the Jets for the 160th.
What could beat that? What's better than that? We'll find out what Roe and Anna have next. It's Bill Leff and Jim Toronto sitting in for Wendy on WGN.